formally begin, just a few household matters. I've put together a draft statement for the media I'm going to distribute to you so that you can look at it and decide whether it suffices or not. We've been provided by a copy of a portfolio committee working draft of the Prevention and Combating of Torture of Persons Bill. Christine and Julia also have received it. If not, we may have asked you to get a copy. So please make sure that you have a careful look at that. Mr. Paso, who is now, well, he signs himself as acting secretary of the NA, but pretty soon he will be formally appointed as secretary. He's asked to speak to me. I decided I will take Mr. Romano with me. Procedures for committees to initiate bills are prescribed in the NA rules, but it would appear that there's a certain procedure and format for the documents, and these must be tabled in the NA so that they can give us the necessary people approval. This is in relation to the Black Administration Act. Yes, we have to extend. All right. PG, welcome formally to you and your team. As is usually the case, I'm going to ask you to introduce your team to the committee members. There are some committee members who are still on the way. It's not that they are showing disrespect to you and your team, it's because they have other pressing duties. Honourable members, forgive me for this, TG, the last thing I should draw to your attention is this workshop that's been convened for Friday with how to deal with bills and such like. We have a program, and I'm beginning to get a little annoyed with the way they deal with us in this place, because they assume that, well, we've got nothing else to do. And, well, okay, my approach, Mr. Swart, is that I would like to have attended the workshop. I don't profess to know anything. And you can learn every day from someone else. So I would have liked it if they arranged it some other time, but it's done on Friday. We're not changing our program to suit them. And I'm going to tell them as much, and I hope they do agree with me.
I was in fact invited to appear under one meeting to do with private members and declined because we are sitting. I think that the workshop is intended to do more than simply set out what is already there. I think it's supposed to take it further, but I think I have declined because we have completed the work.
All right,
DG. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Colleagues, in introducing my team, I just want to preface it by saying we've brought in a reasonably large attempt to do compared to other time when it comes to Parliament for two reasons. One, we have never been exposed to being called for a three-day session, so we went too far of the expectation. But the second issue is, members would recall that I had requested some kind of understanding that from time to time we'll be calling people in the region to come and experience, because they are the people who are doing the job at the gold face, as it were. So in keeping with that, at the extreme end, I have a person who I believe should be known to the members, Mr. Hisham Mohammed. He is the regional head, Western Cape. And then next to him is Mr. IJS Board, Mr. Godfrey Lesima. He is one of our recent acquisitions, not most recent, but our recent acquisitions to come and assist us in program managing most recent acquisition, not in the current year, the previous financial year. He is responsible for ISM in the department, which is the ICT development management and the like. Next to him is Mr. Donald. He's responsible for human resources in the department. Next to him is John Johnson, who is, I believe, known to you. He's acting as our CFO. Next to him is Ms. Goria Gok. She is not new to the members of parliament, but has moved from her previous post to my office. Next to Goria, and the very last person, is Ms. Nomosa Lekgetho. She is a brand new acquisition. She is joining us as the chief of the ministry, but with broad legal experience and qualifications. So that's the team I am bringing. Okay. Also, we have Lungisile Phakathi. He probably just stepped out. And then in this line, at the extreme end, I have Mr. Siyezi Malema.
Malema?
Yes. We also have our own superstar. Mr. Malema is here in two capacities. The first capacity, he is here as acting DPG Court Services, standing in for Advocate Gianni. But secondly, he is here as a regional head of North West. And then I believe known to you as well is Dr. Dibier, who is our chief operations officer in the department, but is also acting as the head of the Office of the Chief Justice. Yes. And then Ms. Mpahlele, Ms. Mpahlele Mbasa is not relatively new, but is a recent acquisition equally, and she has been before this Honourable House a few times now. She is head of strategy in the department. And then myself, Nkululeko Gusinda, the DG. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Yes, it's true. We've decided to set aside 3 days for you. The BRRR process is relatively new for us. We've had one go at it last year, and I said to people in the community that I wasn't very satisfied with our effort last year. One of the things last year was that we had set aside too little time for certain entities and certainly for department, and so if we need to do a thorough job, then we need to give ourselves that necessary space. Of course, one of the members, I've said it to Christine and Julian, we still find ourselves squeezed into a tight little corner, given the amount of time that we've expected to finalize our reports, and that's an issue we're going to have to apply our minds to. An option is for, and I'm saying this for your attention, DG, we're going to ask Parliament to ensure that all annual reports are tabled a lot earlier. You know, I don't know how that's going to affect your operations, but if we can get them, say, well, Christine is saying early in August, and then we begin the process of the BRRR. Right now, all committees have just a month for the entire process, 1 month, no more. For other committees, they have one annual report, just one. This committee has to deal with six, we estimate. And we have, as you know, a large number of entities and organizations, and so that 1 month is extremely tight for us. And so, I mean, just to give you an example, there are MPs who got onto the bus with me this morning carrying their bags, they're leaving, they're going home. Yeah. Yes. I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining. I'm simply pointing out it's a fact. It's a reality. They have very little work, unlike us. And that's just the way it is. But that being the case, there has to be consideration of the fact that 1 month is held purposely insufficient for us. But that's not your problem, Didi. That's ours. And so I'm going to ask you to address us on your department. You're here for the Auditor General. Are we going to try and do this every year? Have the Auditor General brief us, and it would help if you are unable to be at AG for at least someone at a senior level to be present, just to hear what the AG's office is. I'm going to ask the other entities to do the same. So we're now in your hands.
Thank you very much. I will start by prefacing the presentation by going through some procedural issues, small procedural issues that you would wish to highlight to the Honourable Committee. The first is that our presentation, as we have prepared it, goes from slide 1 to program 1, which is what we believe we have to do today, is from slide 1 to slide 80. Slide 1580. And that would be all the slides that we will deal with, which will include all our performance, our strategic issues, our challenges, as well as our budget issues. And then we will deal with financial statements. That is the first issue. The second issue, from a process point of view, is that we had circulated, unlike last year where we submitted the annual report and we understood it had not been circulated, we had checked this year that the annual reports were actually distributed and we were given comfort that they had been. Equally, we prepared our first presentation, we submitted it, we checked a few days later, we were told that we had to adjust it to reflect day 1, day 2, and day 3 in terms of program. We amended it, we checked with the Secretariat, we were given comfort that that too had been circulated, and we just wanted to acknowledge that and thank the Secretariat for that. There are minor issues, minor slight correction that we wish to do on the presentation, but we decided we were not going to circulate another presentation. We will show those minor corrections as I do the presentation. The last issue is that in doing the presentation, I will take the bulk of the presentation. The other issue, the other part of the presentation, which is the financial part, will be taken by the acting CFO, who will deal with it. And then when it comes to question and answers, the whole team will participate to the best of our abilities. Thank you very much. Our presentation starts off with an introduction. We set up the organizational context, which we believe will respond in part to the issues that were raised by the AG, almost confirm the issues that were raised by the AG. Chair, I omitted to say this, that having listened to the AG, and I needed to give this comfort to the members, we do not disagree with the findings of the AG. We will, however, speak to the context of this finding. We will then do an overview of the departmental performance, of course you would have written about and observed in the media and observed in the annual report our performance, and we will try and respond to those issues. We will then deal with, this is an organizational level, we will then do an overview of budget and audit outcomes, and we'll spend a little bit of time there. Then we'll move to actual program performance for program 1, and we'll move to conclude program performance for program 1 today, if possible. Our vision has not changed. we desire to have a transformed and an accessible justice system which promotes and protects social justice, fundamental human rights and freedom. Our mission, too, has not changed. We commit to provide transparent, responsive and accountable justice for all. The principles that continue to guide us remain unchanged as well. We are committed first and foremost to the values as espoused in the Constitution and in particular a culture of human rights and the rule of law in South Africa. We are guided by the Batutile, good governance, Ubuntu, professionalism and continuous improvement, as well as open communication. Our strategic goals, you recognize that too we state as largely as possible to the strategic goals that we had espoused in our strategic document, and that has not changed. Our strategic goals in the main are the increased accountability, effectiveness, efficiency of the Department of Justice and constitutional development. We have indicated that ordinarily this ought not be a strategic goal, but at where we are as a department, it's absolutely necessary that we bring that to sharp focus, and we only could do that if we brought it as part of our strategic goal. The second one is improved effectiveness and efficiency in the delivery of justice services. The third is transformed legal services to protect and advance interests of government and citizens and promote the constitutional development. The fourth is effective coordination of the JCPS cluster in the delivery of outcome three, which is all people in South Africa are and feel safe. We have those legislative mandates which are clearly set out there, and I do not intend dealing with them. They are there for members' completeness. We had a number of policy developments that were introduced during the year under review. One of those policy developments was a transformation of state legal services. In doing this, we submitted, of course, a document in Cabinet which sought to explain to Cabinet how we felt we could improve our state legal services. One, for relevance, two, for effectiveness, and three, for maximum output. The aim of the principles that I espoused in that document, amongst others, aim to overhaul the state legal services in order to provide services at the highest standard compared to where we are today, and to protect and safeguard the interests of the state and advance access to justice for all. We believe that how we have been running our business over the years, we've kind of lost focus, and we need to have changed. So that document intended to do just that. There is a slight error in the presentation because we say it was in February that document was actually published, but in fact the document was released for public comment in May. It was in February, and we apologize for that error. We are now in the process of finalizing the detailed work that this process started, and among others, that detailed work includes the broad consultations within government, which is the Public Service and Administration Ministry, the Ministry of Finance, our own table, which is within the Department of Justice, and the related entities that have opinions to make on this work. But we are relatively comfortable that we've received, I must say, to this Honourable House, initial responses from the Ministry of Finance as well as the Ministry of Public Service and Administration, and we are working to engage further on their initial responses. The second policy initiative, which did not necessarily, strictly speaking, commence during the year under review, but the work took a high level, I guess, the high level activity last year, was the capacitation of the Office of the Chief Justice. Now, there's a slight error in your document in that area where we had said one of of the objectives of this work in the slide that we circulated earlier was to ensure that we work towards a truly independent judiciary. We didn't mean that. When we read it, we actually thought it didn't read right, so we amended it. And now it reads, the department continued to assist the Office of the Chief Justice to enhance the independence of the judiciary, because that's what we're trying to do. And this phase, this process is a phase towards that. And this is, of course, intended in Superior Court B as well as the Constitution 17th Amendment. During the period under review, the department assisted the Office of the Chief Justice with the following. Firstly, we seconded senior departmental staff to the Office of the Chief Justice, as I already indicated. Previously, it was headed by Advocate Gianni, and then when he returned, we seconded Dr. Divier. We will speak broadly as to where we are now, and in other words, when is this secondment intended to come to an end. The second point there is we've advertised senior management posts in line with the developed structure that was approved by the Department of Public Service and Administration. In addition to that, we have engaged with our colleagues in National Treasury on that structure and have received their opinions, and we are expecting some of their opinions in the outcome of what the office will look like. The third element is we've also reviewed the program of work of the South African Judicial Education Institute to be able to start doing the actual training that it was designed to do. During the year under review, the Judicial Education Institute did do some training, but our view is that now it is in a position to do better level of training and better output, because we addressed the governance issues that existed then. And one of the governance issues that we still have not finalized is the amendment of that legislation that fines the SAJ, so that it unlocks some value in the governance arrangements that are set out in that legislation. If I may just highlight a slight issue there, which occasions the need for the amendment, the institute is regulated by the PFMA, and of course the judiciary had some observations that they wanted to make, which they felt are too restrictive to the judiciary in the current context, and so the amendments are aimed at addressing those restrictions that the judiciary felt it would help if those restrictions were not in place. The next is the development of plans to support Constitutional Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal. Those plans we work on the one level, but the second element of work that is happening there is beginning to package the work streams that are going to move to the Office of the Chief Justice, both from the Supreme Court of Appeal as well as from the Concord, because almost on trial phase, these are the first set of courts that are going to go through the Office of the Chief Justice. But there's a second pool, which is the High Court, that are also going to go. And we are now in the department looking at how do we split our business such that there's a bit of our business that goes from personnel, from systems, from budgets, and all of those issues on a trial basis, just to see if this model will work. And that is what we are doing. And then finally, supporting the Judicial Service Commission as well as the Head of Court, we continue to do that. We've prepared a drop-down slide which will indicate to the Honourable Committee the number of progress in filling the posts that we created in the structure that has been approved in the Office of the Chief Justice. We can share that information with the committee if necessary. The third area of policy development is the analysis of judgments of the Common Court as well as the Supreme Court of Appeal. The terms of reference were advertised, as members would know by now. The process came to an end, or in other words, the tender closed. We set an evaluation team, which adjudicated on that bid. It has just given us its report, and therefore we are not able to speak in any more detail, because we are studying the recommendations that they are making there in the report. Now, we want the next set of slides are talking about the organizational context which we found ourselves in 2011-2012, and some of which continue to permeate into 2013-2014 and are likely to continue even in 2014 and beyond. because there are conditions that we don't have direct control over. During the year under review, a considerable time was taken to invest, amongst others, in senior management, turning around the weak administration that we had found ourselves in, which was translating into consistent audit qualifications in a number of areas of our business, in the final analysis affecting our vote, which is why we have continued to receive a qualification. One of the things, we did many, many things, but we are only going to focus on four. We've identified systems, we've identified people, processes, that we need to do to address the biggest challenge, which is the third-party funds. And I'll speak to that in much more detail later, and my colleague, the CFO, will also speak to that issue. The second issue is we prepared the annual financial statements for the third-party fund. Of course, we did a lot of consultation prior to preparing the financial statements to set up the accounting framework, to set up the expectations between ourselves and our stakeholders, particularly the Auditor General, National Treasury, the Standards Accounting Board, and all the wonderful people who are knowledgeable in this area of our business. But we also internally in the department had a lot of consultations on issues of law, given the fact that this is not our money, it's third party funds as the title service, and therefore we can't treat it as if it was those money. So we had to have a lot of that done, and that is now behind us. We are very clear on what needs to happen now. The improvements that happened in the previous year, of course, in the overall votes account, are set out in this slide. And let me just remind honourable members where we come from. We are coming from a very, very, very low base, where in 2008 and 2009 we were qualified pretty much on everything, except that at that time we were not being audited for performance information. So we qualified for everything. In 2009 and 2010 we started really shaking the ground to say we can't continue to be qualified in that manner. So we did a lot of work. So we, and even as I say this now, I really want honourable members not to understand this to say we are out of the woods in those areas. It's still really touch and go, but we are working hard to try and stay in that environment where we are unqualified in assets, in lead management, in listings. You would have heard the Auditor General yesterday saying these problems are still there, but we've now learned to deal with them better, and we hope that that is not interpreted as a negative statement. I took it and we believe it's a positive statement that with this learning and understanding of how to do things better, we can only improve going forward. In 2009 and 10, we were in 2010 and 11, we were qualified in two areas, surplus funds and irregular expenditure. And you know, because we came and shared with this honorable house, big issues that we had with irregular expenditure as a consequence of not applying the PPPFA and making a choice to apply the PPPE, which we are now trying to apply after all of that process. Having said that, because we were audited, strictly speaking, for the first time, not for the first time, but we audited for the first time on performance information, and the auditors had expressed a view, even though that view was only expressed in the management report, we were then disclaimed on performance information. And let me indicate why we were disclaimed. We were disclaimed because we were unable to verify the performance we had claimed we had made or achieved. And therefore the Auditor General disclaimed us. So this year, under review, we had to work extra hard to ensure that all of the things that the Auditor General had said we should do, we did them, and we continue to do them, because we are the first to recognize that by far we are far from where we should be on verification processes and all of that. And once we've put plans in place and we are beginning to believe that they are beginning to shape our business, we are still far from where we should be. So it's work in progress. But as a sign of good faith on our side, we made a commitment to our audit committee, because the audit committee was really upset with us with that disclaimer. We said, look, if we get disclaimed on performance information, there will be people who will walk, and the person next to me will be the first one, and others will follow
really shortly afterwards. We saw this year and the review. We worked very hard. We moved away from that disclaimer into an unqualified audit opinion on performance information. But again, it still has to go. We're working on it. Our eyes are on the ball, and we really want to be given space to focus so that we get an outcome. So this year, we are now left with one qualification, which is TPF. And at this point, I would like to deal with some of the improvements that we've done in TPF. But I would like to remind members, where are we coming from on TPF? Because having read the article by the Honourable Member, I realize that we probably have not told our story in a manner that we understand it and in the manner that is understood by everybody. And no offense to the Honourable Member, I felt that the analysis of our problems could have been done differently. Sorry, ma'am. Thank you very much. Now,
which honourable member?
It was on politics web. Okay. Okay. All right. Anyway, thank you. I want to preface this slide by saying we...
You know, VA has to do, I understand the VA has sort of performance requirements,
yes,
which is linked to number of cases, but it may be linked to her attempt to meet her own performance requirements.
Okay, thank you. The context, honourable members, is as follows. In 2010 financial year, this was the year that we were supposed to finalise the procurement of the PPP solution for TPF, the Credit Partnership Solution for TPF. Prior to this, for a period of at least 2.5 years, we were in the procurement phase of this system. And I really want to emphasise this point. When, as a department, we had taken the decision that we were going to go out to procurement of the system, we literally refocused to the procurement process and did not look at the running of TPF as a business. In other words, our whole shift was on the procurement process. We jumped into the PPP advertised and all of that, which was a good thing. But there was a business still to be run. We were still receiving money, we were still paying out money, and that part was the part that we did not do adequately. Now, in terms of how we capacitated, at human level, at system level, and at process level, we didn't pay sufficient attention, and we regret that. And I already said in Thailand, we regret that we made that. We made that call. But that's because of the model we had adopted. In the PPP, we were supposed to outsource the problem. And that is why we then didn't invest in people, didn't invest in processes, because the problem was going to go away. Now, that is the point that really we would like Parliament to recall all the time when we're dealing with this issue. So as a result, there were no people adequately, there were no processes adequately, there was no oversight adequately, and sometimes at all in some areas. And it's a fact. Now, what we then did from 2010 and 2011, we started focusing on what do we do, how do we turn this around. Remember, we were also not submitting financial statements at that time as well. So we tried to change the situation in the following way. The first thing was we had to make a decision on the PPP, which we've since made, because we felt that to procure a system when there is nothing going on the ground is not going to solve all our problems. The first is we must resort the people, we must change our environment, we must change the people, we must change the purposes, we must enforce standardization and all of that. And so the work that we are doing is consistent with what we said in 2010 to this Honourable House. And we are doing it, and are keeping our eyes on the ball so that we do it. Is it fat enough chair, I'm the first person to say, I wish we had thousands of us to push it further. And that's the point. So during the year under review then, we prepared the annual financial statements after all the processes that I've already articulated in the previous slide. And this was the first time that we were doing a very, very complex but very detailed exercise. There was a whole process which was, I believe, presented to this Honourable House to tell you how we're going to do that. So I'm not intending to go over that again. All I'm saying is that we had a process that was first considered, secondly agreed with the people that we had asked to come and assist us, thirdly the engagements with all the regions to ensure that regions participated, because we can never succeed in turning the CPF environment around without dealing with and ensuring that the regions come to the party. The head office is not going to be able to do that. So as an organization, we must all work together to ensure that we are able to do that. So as a result of this, we submitted the financial statements to the Auditor General. There is one thing that I need to indicate to the House, and it was read by the Auditor General yesterday. We had to put our pegs on the fence and say, we recognize all the problems that happened historically, but it would serve no value for us to go back and prepare financial statements from however long a period. So we said we are going to take a risk as management, which we're employed to do, and we're very happy to take this risk. We took that risk and we put our pegs on the ground and said 2009, 10, 11, 12, and going forward. And we wrote to the Auditor General and National Treasury, and we informed them of this choice that we were making, because we felt it's not in the interest of taxpayers' money to go all the way back. We need to peg and understand what our problem is as quickly as possible. And to do that, we need to pick the period and try and address everything else within that period. And that has already been agreed by the AG, already agreed by the National Treasury. So that was the second issue that we've spoken about in the different paragraph of the first of that slide. But despite this, all this exercise, which now with hindsight, we believe that it took 80% of our time as management just trying to push this thing, or CPF, and maybe 80% is an exaggeration, but it took a lot more time than we had invested, than we had thought we would invest in this. There was a direct impact in the overall performance of our business. But it's important that you understand that within this, the context of the previous slide and this slide in particular. So we delivered the annual financial statement together with the compensator to the Auditor General. The Auditor General had done its work. We had anticipated to deliver the financial statement slightly earlier, but we experienced some problems with bank statements that we received from our bank, and that delayed us a little bit. But after that, submitted, and the Auditor General audited correctly. The Auditor General took a period of plus minus 6 months to do the audit. That's because of the magnitude of work involved, and we understand that they have to take that long a time. So we hope that they too have done their own lessons, and will incorporate those lessons in the audit once we submit the financial statements for this year. The key initiatives undertaken to prepare the financial statements, as I've indicated, included consultations, included putting people and systems in place, which we've done, not completely, not adequately, but we've done as much as we were able to do during the year under review. In addition, we also took remedial actions to ensure that current and as well as future financial statements will meet the requirements of reporting, but will also meet the expectations of the public. One of the things that we had to do was to develop the operating standard procedures, which we shared with this Honourable House, develop and implement key controls in the system, which now already exist. We also were mindful of the fact that service in the city environment must continue to happen. So during this period, with our imperfect system, we also increased the number of calls that we are paying through EFT. And we, at the end of that financial year, were sitting at 103 calls. That number has grown considerably now. What this means is that it has two benefits for us. The first benefit is that it creates a paper trail, which struggling with in the current environment when we pay via ESP. So we are happy about that. The second thing is that it reduces the time we used to take to pay maintenance beneficiaries. So now we've reduced the time to between 10 days to 9 days to 10 days to between 24 to 48 hours in paying beneficiaries. So we are very excited about that. We've increased that number. You'll see later in the presentation that the number has increased, and we have a target of reaching 200 cords this financial year, current. So that is the third issue. Well, the third, second issue. The third issue is we embarked on extensive training at court level, and if we say at court level, at court managers, area court managers, supervisory level, we've been at training because we really felt it was necessary that we do that. We have the specifics later in the presentation that we've hyperlinked that we can show the ordinary member. At this stage, I must apologize for that lack of that and hope that honorable members will forgive me in particular, in person, because we haven't tabled the financial statement, but we tell what the opinion was. But it was wrong because we should have tabled the financial statement before telling you the opinion. So pretend as if you didn't see it. It's not wrong. The opinion is not wrong, but pretend procedurally that you didn't see it. Now we move, remember that we said the qualification on TPF. Now we are moving to, we had a qualification on irregular expenditure. What did we do to address the qualification on irregular expenditure? Last year we were not qualified on irregular expenditure for the following reasons. If you look at, if you track, I said we had a big qualification in 2009 and then, we had and that qualification really was because of non-compliance with certification. They didn't even deal with the problem. It was just non-compliance, and of course they had made a lot of findings, but the major one was that. 2010, 2011, it was completeness of the figures that was included in the annual report. The 2011, 2012, which is the year under review, we were not qualified in that area. And the reason why we were not qualified is because we did a lot of work. We tightened our controls in identifying, you recall the Auditor General yesterday said, in the identification, we have improved. We must now improve the prevention and the treatment, you know, and the corrective measure. So he's correct, we agree. We are improving in the identification, but even in the identification, there's still a lot of work to be done. Systems like this mature over a period, at which point the system can run on its own. At this stage, these systems still need people to ensure that they happen. So that is what the Auditor General was trying to say, and I agree and I confirm that that part is the case. So our biggest problems with the qualification in relation to 2010 were pre-qualification, tax compliances, and the lack. We have been able to address those, and where we still found that that was not done, we were able to identify those areas and report on them adequately in the annual report. So what I'm saying, it doesn't mean that there was no regular expenditure, but we were able to identify it and report it appropriately in the annual report. And then the Auditor General can qualify you when you do that. So that was the issue. We also implemented remedial actions. There were processes. We also informed the Auditor General about these processes. We held hearings where we said, if you have an irregular expenditure, first come up and tell us. So we had committees that we're going through with, and in some instances, not all instances, we condoned certain if we felt everything was in order except for one minor issue. But if we felt there was an errant behavior, we did not condone. We recorded it as such. And we also improved our financial reporting. So we are saying this process is still touch and go, but it's there. We are working on it. It's work in progress, that we believe that it will result in an unqualified audit opinion in the total vote going forward. The third area that I've already spoken to is performance information. During the year under review, we were disclaimed on performance information, and the reason for the disclaimer was the usefulness of the information that we provided to support our performance. Also, our indicators were not very well defined. They were not smart. And the reliability of information, as I've indicated, was shaky. Now, let me go back to the first bullet under review. Members would recall that we came to this honorable house and we said, yes, we have a problem. We realize that our indicators are not smart. please allow us to amend. We had a lot of issues. The Honorable House was not very comfortable with that. We went back. We indicated that it was going to be resolving a problem, and it did. And so the following year, then we had to take all our energies back in defining our indicators. And I must say, we improved quite considerably from where we were when the outcome-based reporting system of reporting started to where we are. But it's still a very long way to go. So when you talk about social performance or additional cost performance, you will realize that there are areas where there are certain indicators that we must bring there, but redefine them cleaner. And maybe there are indicators that we can filter out and introduce new indicators going forward. There is always an opportunity for that. And we feel that as we mature, we must start engaging with that conversation. 2011-2012, the opinion was unqualified as I've indicated, but, and I need to explain this, this is where the issue of underperformance kicks in. In this process, and the Auditor General was quite correct when he said the majority of the Auditor General's processes 42 is beginning to benefit the panel. He is right, and I agree with him. Because if the Auditor General is not giving you the opportunity to correct, we really would have been in trouble. So I agree wholeheartedly with that. We have reported slightly better performance than that. But in our verification process, in here, we had to restate a few times our performance, because as the quality assurance processes in the department were happening, we realized that we were not at that level. But in our own quality assurance systems, because they are quite new, at this stage they are not picking up everything. So the auditor general still has to come and unravel the couple we have been for ourselves. So we do not disagree, therefore, with the interpretation of the Auditor General, well, with the actual observation of the Auditor General. But we are saying, please bear with us. We are very mindful of that. But in investing so much in process development and all of that, it's quite possible, and this is what happened in our environment, is that the performance that we were working towards and the verification and all of that did bring us down in the financial analysis, but it's not going to happen this current financial year. We are going to report a lot improved performance in meeting our objectives. But I really want to speak to the last bullet, which is the restatement as a result of audit processes. And I think the auditor general said we did a lot of restatement and he stressed that it's important to do restatement when you realize that you are having problems with your areas, rather than to hold steadfast and pretend as if the auditor general has not told you, because then you're going to qualify. You have to make choices as management, and we did make some choices to restate where we felt we were uncomfortable with our own evidence. But what is the reason for me personally and for our management of ACCO? The biggest lesson to us is that it's important that as we submit performance reports, we send information almost there and then, and we verify it, and we quality assure it way before that comes to the auditor general. And I think the auditor general also said that. So we've come to that realization, and we are trying to do that. And it is at this stage that I would like to very briefly, and I'm not going to speak to the whole issue, but we've introduced a process where we call it an audit action plan, where we take all the internal audit findings, all the audit findings of the auditor general, and some of the areas that have been raised by scope that we have not yet combined with, put them together. We had that process even in the previous year. In fact, it started in the previous year. And you would say then why we did not pick up all of these things. That process in itself was being developed, therefore it wasn't matured, and it hasn't still matured. But even in the process, our internal audit, our audit committee said to us, the best way you can handle the process is to ensure that the definition of what has been achieved must be better. So this year we worked on the definition. We now have a clear definition of how to improve the calculation, because this is what had killed us the previous year. And that's all I want to say on that part. And then we have a drop-down slide on that as well. now, What initiatives were undertaken to turn around the issue of performance? Of course, we started doing monthly reporting, which I did say in the previous few meetings that we, as ex-co, twice a month. The one month we talk about, I mean, the one meeting in the month we talk about performance, and the other meeting in the month we talk about strategic issues. And so we submit monthly reports now. It's a process that will mature in time, and that will help us. There is a verification process that happened through the compliance unit, which we also introduced last year. We are also using the internal audit to do the verification processes and to identify the weakness and tell us. And we believe that has improved somewhat, not at the level where it should be, but it has improved somewhat. We've built more control around source documentation. We check source documentation a little more than we used to before. And we take action against officials who are following processes and procedures that are set out. We make extra effort to determine performance targets scientifically and to link them to adjacent resources. So we have started those processes. They are already happening, so it's not what will happen in the future. And of course, if people are not submitting on time, they do receive letters from myself, which of course ultimately will work out into a formal process that we may have to go through on that. One of the major issues also that affected our government, and we felt we were visited by this National House because there were a lot of complaints last year in the predominantly in the master's environment, but we also knew that we had some issues in the state attorneys that were associated with the relocation process. There are two things that I want to raise in this slide. The first is that we take full responsibility as managers that we ought to have planned the relocation a lot better. And it was not planned as it should have been. So we had plans that we thought would work, and going forward, if we ever have a relocation of that magnitude, we will plan it 10 times more, and we'll go over the plans over and over again. So we want to take that responsibility. But having said that, this was a monumental relocation. It was big in every sense of the word. State attorneys in Pretoria, big business. Mother's office in Pretoria, big business. And just those two alone was just a huge issue. Remember, we had also informed this Honorable House that we were having problems with knowing when to move and all of those issues. So we really had problems with our department. Public works in that area, and it wasn't just their problem, it was our problem, but of course combined with theirs, it just made our problem a little bigger. So we are not doing public works, we are saying we, the management, if this was our business, we should have taken more responsibility to ourselves, and we didn't do as much as we should have. Now, moving a business like that would have direct impact on your business anyway, and it affected us a little more than it anticipated, and that is why it would have affected our business. We also had a big commission last year that was instituted last year on special defense packages, and our apologies if we're prepared to eat anything else anywhere else in these lands. Now that commission took a lot of energy from us, literally a lot of research, a lot of energy, a lot of putting documents together, even with the appointment itself. And I do hope that the Honorable House will appreciate that, both in terms of planning the logistics, the budget, the research, the drafting of regulations, the drafting of everything, that the appointment processes, all of that really was a lot of work. And really took us our focus on from the hall for a little while, but we were back on track in those times. We also experienced serious budget cuts, and I know that the Auditor General spoke about the accruals yesterday, and they were back as well on the accruals. But if you combine the accruals together with the budget cuts, we will be experiencing serious difficulties. When we get to the budget slide, you will see that we spend 99.9% of our budget, which means that we spend the money and we need more money, and that's all I used to say on this side. On service delivery, what we really want to assure this Honorable House of is, in spite of all the problems that we have, courts continue function. and really wants His Honorable House to take time back in that. We spent 4.2 billion, we allocated to conservative grants, of course to support the adjudication of cases. And that money was spent primarily in that area of our business, and was spent for the purpose for which it was allocated. Of course, you know that we have 9 provinces, we have 13 high courts, we have 380,000 magisterial districts consisting of 766 courts, and that's a portfolio of courts, 369 main courtiers, 92 branch courts, 56 branch offices throughout the country, 449 periodical courts, and other areas that we support from time to time, which build into court work in the final analysis. So on daily basis, we have approximately 1,686 courts in session, pretty much the same as the point in time during the working hours of court. No longer have World Cup courts that operate after hours, except for some of these courts. So performance of these courts continue to happen, but it's a joint responsibility of stakeholders. As was said yesterday by the prosecution authority, and we want to just confirm that. Part of the responsibility that we have is to ensure that we marshal all these areas to work together, the judicial, the prosecution, the litigant, and I don't mean physically marshalling them, but ensure that we create space for them to work. Our own officials in the form of court clerks, the interpreters, the stenographers, and all of those wonderful people, the health professionals in terms of psychiatrists, reports, the pathologists, reports, the toxicology reports and the like, the social workers, probation officers, the investigators, and all of that. And all of that is what we do in the Department of Justice. And sometimes when we talk 72% underachievement, we do not take the whole picture into account. The following slides now will talk to some of this work. In court, and I do not intend going through each element of the slide unless members want me to. This is the information, I think it's corroborated in part by the information that was presented by the National Prosecution Authority. Suffice to say that in some areas we are seeing growth in the performance, but there are those areas that performance remains a challenge which we must address. All right. Now we move to the key service point. One of the things that we had said was happening last year and continues to happen, and we are very heartened by this, is the case flow management. Now, theoretically, we've been talking about case flow management for a very long time, but our current Chief Justice is a serious proponent of case flow management, and we're really, really honored to have him for that case. He's taken direct responsibility to ensure that there shall be case flow management physically operating at every level, and it is happening. And I can tell you, if you look at our report, which we also provided on backlog cases, you will see the difference. Of course, it's early days. We hope to see a bigger difference going forward, but the energy he's putting into this thing, I am personally convinced that he can't go wrong with that level of engagement of the judiciary in terms of case flow management. But also, through this process, the forums have been established at regional as well as local levels. We are already working together to identify common problems, define common solutions for those problems, ensuring that those solutions are implemented. There's a monitoring and evaluation of performance that is beginning to be looked at and to be strengthened. I must indicate that in this area we remain with the challenge of statistics and where the statistics should lie, but that's an engagement that we are having with, honestly, with the Office of the Chief Justice, with the MPA, as well as with ourselves, because as a country, not as Department of Justice, as a country, we must have one source of statistics that we can all agree on the outcomes and the implication of the statistics. So we are very, very heavy with this area of our The third bullet is the bullet that we are saying, if you look, for instance, as an output, you know, as an outcome, we are beginning to see a decrease of people
on the man who are remand detainees, because cases are moving a little faster in court than they used to before. And what we want to do is want to see that number dropping even further in the not too distant future. With the current Chief Justice, I'm convinced we are going to see that happen going forward. You would also recall, honorable members, that we came here to report that we had a digital recording contract, and it has since become known as the Mela contract.
Mm.
We had issues with here. We accept that in any big contract like that one, you would have issues. But we mustn't forget why we went through this project. We went through this project because we're having serious problems in two areas. One, the loss of documents. So the Mela project was intended to turn that around. The second was, and the time it takes to find those documents and the impact it has on the justice system. The second was a problem that we were experiencing, if I may continue to share, even as the presentation is lost. The second issue that we had to look at was, that we were trying to address, was the space. We had no space in court. We were literally walking on top of documents in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to find a mechanism to scan those documents and to remove the physical hard copies and send them elsewhere. Because in most courts, and I can tell you where I've been, whether it's like a street, whether it's South and South High Court and all of the places, we really had so many documents that we didn't have space for, that we had to find a solution for, which we did. And I'm happy that that project has moved relatively well to ensure that, and we are going to start seeing real benefits of that project. In spite of some of the challenges that we experience. And I want to very briefly talk about how do we address the challenges that we experience. We did address the challenges that we experience. We engaged MELA quite extensively, and we continue to be in conversation with them just to ensure that those problems are not repair. And I have not received any new challenges from courts which were saying they are still struggling to get documents, because as and when we receive those problems, we address them almost immediately. The COO is responsible for that project, and at this stage, I think the project is working well. Now, thank you very much for your presentation.
Think about
that. We will. All right. Now, the next area that we want to talk about also, I don't know what is happening to my apologies, there's something going on that is interrupting our... the next level of issue that we intervened on was service delivery at key points. You would recall the next level is really service delivered in key high court matter of the high court. Now, we are responsible for 14 master's courts throughout the country, and there is a lot of money that was invested during this period in the master's environment. That's like, because there's a minor correction or clarification that I need to make. In the slide that we circulated, we had the figure there was 324 million. But I want to explain this as well. Originally, we had 324 million that was allocated to the Master of the High Court. However, after the budget review process, that amount increased to 331, and that's the direction we want to just to set the record straight. This, in my view, is an area that we had serious challenges with performance. But overall, if you compare 2010 to 2011 financial year, this is the state, we had 191,402. This is the state enrolled in 2010, 2011 financial year. In the current year, we had 170,000, and liquidation similarly, the number in the current year reduced somewhat on liquidation. On trust, the number increased marginally, and on curatorship, the number increased quite significantly. Now, there are areas where we were concerned about the performance, and when we came to ask for permission to amend our targets in year and our indicators in year, this was among the areas that we felt we challenged in, and it showed in the final performance at the end of the financial year. But we since worked on it and corrected the area of our work. And maybe let me explain how we corrected it. In areas where the work that must be done by the master is to supervise and to regulate and to guide, but the master doesn't do the actual physical work, he or herself, we've adjusted and reformulated the targets to reflect that. And so that we can show that some work happens at that level, but there remains a supervisory responsibility and oversight responsibility over the master, or by the master over the third person. So that's how we've adjusted our targets going forward. So work will still continue, and the owner of the house should not really be worried too much about that, because we have that under control. The master environment, we will report in detail on under program 3 on day 3. It will be Friday. Now we move to the budget outcome. As usual, I have always preferred to give a numbers story to the CFO, who's better knowledgeable on this part than I am. So I'm handing over to the secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I was challenged yesterday by my children to explain why are we spending 440 million in entertainment according to some media house. It was easier to explain. It was more difficult to explain to them. Hopefully today they have the question, and I need to answer the question to you, and hopefully you'll understand why we spend so much money on that particular line item, but we'll get there. But quickly, as part of the annual report, there's a focus on financial management and the quality of spend and utilization of resources. When the media starts on audit outcomes, I would want to reflect to you high level in terms of the experience outcomes, maybe reflect on what we're doing in terms of improving the audit outcomes. And then also, as part of your BIR process, give you a sense of what is the major spending increases in our environment. Next. We can come to you and in a report and improve departmental spending. You can see in 2019 we were 99.8%. We in 2011-12 we managed to get to 99.999%. We gave back 1 million rand to the national fiscus. It's either we are good or we are under strain. I think the numbers reflect that the department we are under substantial strain, and we will argue later on for some additional injections within the department. Next one. The next one is the overall indication of final expenditure. You get normally the original budget approved by Parliament, and then you get adjustments during the year. And within the rules, we can do reallocation of money. The IG tested whether we've done it within the prescripts, and just give you an overall sense of the spending on the respective minimum programs. We needed to do some reallocation. And we can reflect you later on where did we take money. Usually, if we had a 10% vacancy rate, it translated in some service, some savings. It was reallocated to other critical service points. But this slide reflects above the line the total of 99.999%, and below the line things that we are responsible for and accountable for, the judges' salaries and the magistrate salaries, again also a 99% minimum expenditure. The next slide overall gives you a sense of the expenditure for the various line items, and you can see that we spent billion rand on goods and services. And the difficult question that I need to answer, entertainment, travel and subsistence, was possibly 18% of the 2.6 billion rand. So this overall reallocation of funds, the final adjusted budget, and what was the final expenditure, but most of the items in essence mean 100% spent. Next slide. The next slide, some observations improved departmental spending. Treasury surely assisted us during the adjustment budget because they gave us the money for the salary increases, but they also assisted during the adjustment budget the public protector. We give the money to the public protector, but they also surely assisted the special investigation unit. We can come to you and say that through our own reprioritization, we have managed to increase our spending on capital, on buildings and fixed structures. The original budget was 598 million. We've added some money, over 80 million, just to beef up the infrastructure spend. The major program where we still spend our money on is court services, and there was a 7.8% increase in the expenditure of court services, 3.9 billion up to 4.2 billion. In terms of the funding that we transfer to entities, there was one particular substantial increase. We from our own budget assisted, in treasury being assisted because of a peculiar situation in SIU in terms of the cash flow. I think our financial statements lastly in Jefferson reflect the strain because we in finance need to balance compliance with the service delivery demands. Service delivery demands could be free service providers within 30 days. But on the other hand, I'm also said with the responsibility, the PFMA says, please spend budget within your congregation. So for us, it was a tight call. You would see the numbers reflect some increase in the number in our accruals. The previous year, it was 180 million, 185. This year, it is, the last financial year, it's over 379 million. But for us, it's very important. There was this budget cuts. We need to process witness fees. We need to process a lot of core court function security. And for us, it was either overspent or have the substantial accruals, and it is what eventually reflected. The DC neckline reflected, and we want to confirm you will get later presentations of the Guidance Fund, the President's Fund, and CARA. We managed to get clean orders in that environment. The qualification and the vote next slide. It's in the TPF. We argue that we've cleaned a lot of other areas. But in terms of the revenue that flow from the vote, from TPF to the vote, it is was in essence our problem. It's 300 million we've paid over to the National Revenue Fund. The question is whether it is complete. So that is the basic reason for our qualification. Now, Apart from the TF, the TPF, what investments did we conclude in order to turn the things around within the justice? The one thing that we've done is we can confirm to you we've established a compliance unit and a compliance policy unit. Our internal control unit firm is an additional unit because we're saving our money in consultants. We established our own budget internal control unit. It just focuses on the compliance issues in terms of the processing of payment assigned by the delegated authority. Is it a valid expenditure? But to get to an improved audit outcome, I think we must sustain this. We've had our debriefing workshops with all management, all region leaders, all court managers. And we say, colleagues, this is a challenge. There was a comprehensive national audit action plan supported by regional audit action plans. We established internal control. In fact, we just established another unit that will look at payment within 30 days. For us, previously, our payment within service amendment 30 days, our average turnaround time was 72 days. We've brought it now down to 45 days. And this unit will assist us to continuously, more effectively monitor invoices and following up of payments so that we don't have a situation that invoice is lying on somebody's table and it will be processed. We've deployed additional resources in supply chain management and asset management, and we've had task teams deployed in the regional offices. Now, surely, in my financial environment, if I spend a bit more on training, then I need to spend a bit more on travel and subsistence. So for the very point is, there was a lot of intervention in order to ensure that we improve our performance in general. Next slide, we've done a lot in terms of enhancing our departmental policies and prescripts. We are training at national office at the regional level, to make practitioners, our checking on three quotations, is compliance with service providers. Some people are really upset with us because we don't want to pay the tariffs because some of them are not tax compliant. But we are really, really pushing with the lawyers. We push it outside be tax compliant because otherwise I'm transgressing the PFMA. So we've got monthly reports to Excel on the status on our open system plan. We are preparing our quarterly financial statements. We can improve a bit more because for us now it's just a compliance issue, but surely we need to get to the qualitative work around those financial statements. We do budget and expenditure reviews. The basic problem with budget and expenditure is that we don't have the space for a really bold decision. If we have to effect bold decisions, then it means some services we must suspend because we are very worried, and you can see the issue of accruals and commitments comes up, continuing. Next slide. Now, I had a briefing with you from previously, but just to confirm, on TPF, what do we do to clear the qualification? For us, it's 4 years, 40 million transactions that we need to work through. We can say we've done 2009 and 2011. I'm ready today to submit the 2011-12 financial statements, and I want to submit on time the 2012-13 financial statements. The problem is, it's good that we have better audits on those first 2 years, because we can see the agency telling us, you have problems with opening balances. They indicated you will have problems with supporting documentation. Because the agency will come and say, but you've effected this payment, there's this maintenance order. Now I need to go and train a maintenance order that was executed in 1995 or 1998 as support of the documents for this transaction. So document management will be a problem, and then follow up of management of shortages and losses. We've got a good sense of what is the value of the management of these shortages and losses, and we just need to work on this. So the basic thought was we submitted the financial statements for the first 2 years. Now we are ready, but we've in fact implemented the plan after the audit, the indication from the auditors, what is forthcoming. We are working towards the 15th of November to submit the 11th financial statements. But this is basically the work since the mid-October is focused on two areas. One, document management, each court manager making sure for each transaction is supporting documentation. The second part is accounting validation. I've got a team of accounting people who do validation and check the statements for consistency and for correctness. And we've got a process in terms of measuring or clearing the shortages. Just high level going forward, this is maybe the broader detail of the presentation. We are busy with the systems review. We've done our own systems review. We've got IFA team people now on board. We've got Treasury approval for the development of a new system. Just to the gremlins in the current system we would want to fix. But concurrently, we must look at our operating procedures and our current financial reporting. But we are doing work in terms of systems review. The big thought is to have a new system implemented the 1st of April 2014. Because we've done a system review, we have come in with the next steps to do the specifications. But the systems would be, where we currently have 474 bank accounts. SARS only have 4 bank accounts. Why can't we consolidate some of our accounts and bring in better efficiency in electronic reconciling? But this is the thoughts around the systems. We've drafted legislation. We are about to table the legislation or to engage the stakeholders. One of the key stakeholders is the Minister of Finance. We've drafted legislation for how this fund will look in the future and what kind of relationship with the department and you'll have, or surely as a committee, will have an opportunity then to input and guide members. But after this, our big challenge is, a lot of us possibly are not going to leave, but from December, January, February, March, to conclude the 2012-13 financial statement. I think as when the mandate is so clear, we need to get clean audits and third party funds this financial year. So I mean, I think we will the jury's out whether we'll get there. One of the issues it is compounding main operations, main with injustice is surely the issue of resources. And in the budget process, your committee has an opportunity to influence this, and surely we must acknowledge, and our documentation to your researchers will reflect, you acknowledge what you've done last in terms of negotiating an indexing infrastructure for us. So, but surely, we get the clue from the National Fiscal and the Minister Committee in the budget. I think this is key that this would be communicated in National Treasury. The indication to us is when we construct our new budget, we must consider the economic outlook. And we should be ready for fiscal constraint, and we must move away a bit from consumption to investment. So maybe the answers need to spend a bit more on infrastructure and investment. I didn't say Treasury said that we must regain public trust. It is increased perception of public sector wastefulness, increasing abuse of state resources. Now, if we can get to improve all outcomes and enhance accountability, I can tell the oversight authorities, we're spending X hundred million on this line item, but it is a particular cost driver in our environment. Surely, across the country, we got periodical courts and circuit courts, and people need to be moved in. I mean, so the basic point is, we would want to give you a sense that we are communicating in terms of improved audit outcomes. We must keep spending within the overall ceiling limit established in 2012. It means no money. The Treasury indication to all departments is go and implement the 1%, 2%, 3% baseline minimum reduction. Now the question is, can justice afford it? I've argued in my discussion with your researchers, correctional service can argue we release prisons from incarceration to community corrections. Police might say, but no, we will patrol cars instead of three times a day, we'll do it two times a day. We can tell the public that, sorry, we can't process a case because we don't have money. So we surely understand the economic conditions, but unfortunately our demand for services is vast. Surely also, how do we ignore our security risk? You've seen a number of incidents in our courts. Now, you mean in the document that I will share with yourself and our motivation for more money, we will show you the substantial increase in our cost of security. We possibly spend half a billion rand a year now on security. And we did apply our mind in terms of speak to police, speak to defense, look at other options. But for us, we sit now with this situation that we don't have enough money. Surely Marikana or any security threat at the moment for to a magistrate, to a judge, influence ourselves. The context is, and I will share with you the challenge around this possible 1%, 2%, 3% in budget cut. Next slide. Just to confirm to you, this shows on average a 5.4% increase in the budget over 3-year period. So from the current 15 billion, our budget will increase to 18 billion. On average of 5.4%, but the wage settlement is 7%. The municipal rates and taxes is 10-15%. The leases increase 8%, 10%. So I'm just saying that what we are saying to you as a department, we are effectively to fund above inflation salary increases, increase in transport costs. See, government transport put the cost of fuel back to us, whilst we still need to expand services. So the 5.5% overall annual growth is an area of concern. Next slide. The next slide gives you a sense of where's the growth. I think the best possible growth as we construct the budget is in court services, or average 5.6%. But otherwise, there is no substantial increase in incapacity. The next slide gives you a sense of the breakdown of our expenditure. Economic classification. I think one interesting or good line is, and I confirmed it last year, you see buildings and structures. We were really fortunate as a department to have a substantial capital budget. It's over billion rand. So we're going to possibly spend in the next 4 years nearly 4 billion rand, over 4 billion rand on infrastructure. Our challenge is, as soon as those words are delivered, it needs to be operationalized. We didn't come to Parliament and say, oh, Treasury, give us money for Galashiwe. we prioritize it within our baseline. Because a number of calls about that were open, about to be open, and the point is, yes, it's good to have a good infrastructure program, but on currently other investments, mean for terms of personnel, legal prosecution, court admin staff, startup costs of these new beautiful courts needs to be affected in our resourcing. The next slide gives you a sense, and always this slide will give a sense of possible questions. You can see there the growth in our the resourcing of our public entities and our constitutional institutions. The public projector get an average increase of 7%. Well, overall the growth in these entities is possibly 5%. I want to confirm to you, from next year on, the represented political parties find one with justice anymore. It's a decision, it's moving out of justice. So, in the special investigating unit, there was, where I've indicated previously, there was problems, months of case injections, and usually is given the SIU time to go and solve them in the legal issues, and maybe they will look at many of the development there, and maybe if needed, have further case injections. So this is a breakdown of our program level. The next slide is now if really Parliament or Mincombat continue with this with this budget cut. We need to possibly back cut our budget with over a billion rand, 163 million, 347 and 544 million. Now, we can't lay off personnel. 163 million means we need to cut down on services. Because you've got existing contracts. You will see in the IK public, take with the judges and magistrate salaries. How do I say 25 million in cut? In the baseline of the magistrates and judges, their salaries are for provision for 150 million for additional appointments. We are possibly arguing, they must also pay to reduce the employment in order to assist with this billion rand. If that does not happen, it comes back to the department and the core line function women will be affected. It will be very, very difficult for this department. With Treasury, you guys looked at my complaints to yourself in terms of the budget cut, but it's just a question, as you analyze the departmental course drivers, it is not just possible. So this is an early indication to you of if the cabinet or the Mincombat director is implemented, what will be the impact of on the justice main program. Now what do we do? We reduce travel and subsistence, all of us in Asian flying economy class. What we are saying is we want to reduce the lifespan of assets. Instead of having a computer for 3 years, have it for 5 years. I don't know whether organized labor will accept a lowering of provision for performance bonuses or perhaps more, just minimize payment of performance bonus. We know there's a DTSA prescription that says, or prescription that says, this is a percentage provision. We must look at, this is a number of operational staff in the questions. We want to portray to you is that we are looking at how we can cut down costs. We do conferencing instead of us flying to various offices. But now, I know people are not going to like it if I say, but the state legal service components must have a video conference link with a portfolio committee instead of being here every day. But this is how far we should think. We must look at telecommunication costs. In fact, what we've just said is, on the table is a reduction of shareholder limits, a 25% reduction of all senior managers. The big challenge is, and I can now go take flag of it, what do we say for judiciary and the magistracy? Currently, this is just focused on the administration. We're saying we must utilize public sector capacity. We've been offered the services of Stats SA. They have a big scanning capability, as part of the census, and they say now there is no census, the scanning, document scanning capability is dormant. Why can't we use it to scan our court documentation? So renegotiations of CITAC contracts or security, those are the kind of things that we need to explore. People say when it's a cutting budget, the first line item that goes is training. Now the question is, can we justify a reduction in training? Our people need to be trained on child justice and sexual offences and new pieces of legislation. Legal aid indicated perhaps in the environment they need to be cutting salaries and relating operating expenditure. But this is what we are really thinking of, maybe, but we are still not immediately, because will get effected if 1 billion cut is effected. Now, for me as a finance, I must sometimes make bold decisions, and the question is, can we postpone or delay the implementation of certain priorities? Traditional courts, the court manager strength, the protection of information bill. There is an allocation there, but hopefully, because the movement is not big, maybe we can utilize the settings. But in turn, I don't want to spend a lot of time around here, but this will be, if the budget cut is affected, the slide heading say, a disaster of program service delivery. We've raised this before, Treasury is reluctant. What we are saying is, on infrastructure investment, we've got this brilliant, can't we just for now, and the outstanding accounts to public works, just for now, possibly temporary for a year or two, just reallocate money from the capital budget to the municipal rates and taxes, just to clear the backlog. But Treasury's position is, infrastructure investment is now key, and women where we are. The next slide is, again, what will be the impact on outputs and service delivery? If I enforce to the managers in regional areas and say, if you don't have money, there's no services, do we then say, but court cases must be postponed or suspended? And what does it mean for organizational performance? I mean, if we do some of these things, I'm concerned about conviction rates and case finalization rates. You know, there is the master services. We surely want to expand master services to rural provinces like Malanga, to a new office in Johannesburg for Guardian Fund operations. But if we don't have the money, well, I mean, how come, can't we do it? So there's perhaps some thoughts about what will be the impact now on our service delivery next slide. But they will now get to the BRR process, and we've got a, you can see I will link there, we've got a document, it support, in a summary slide, those four male portions. Basically what we're saying is, if we need to talk to you to control the community's part of your process, apart from economic conditions, how can you put less assistance during this process? The first thing we want to ask is additional capacity for court administration, prosecution, and legal aid, consistent of course with the capacity increase in necessity. We cannot have a situation, I've told you before, having 150 million in appointment with judge and magistrates, and we make those appointments, and there's no legal aid or prosecution or court in sending supporting. The second question is, or request is, a startup and operational cost for new lower courts. Basically, we've delivered courts about the river, Takani, Katlong, Pakhis, and Zuma, Farmers. Those are the policy where we in essence ask money for 5 courts and design the vehicle costing, what it costs to operate in a court, what kind of support structures in the submission. The next thing, third element of resourcing that we ask for funding is funding sought for municipal rates and taxes and lease accommodation. Truly, the past number of years, 30%, 50%, 50% increase in municipal rates and taxes, whilst our budgeting is 5.4% in each problem. The next one is security guarding and installation. In the detailed presentation to Mr. Jefferson, you will see the growth in our cost of minimum security. We've tried to, with interventions, both to a critical infrastructure walkthrough in the Texas, but for us, we expose that possibly we've got half of what we need. The first one we just want to flag, perhaps it is not one thing that we should consider. Public Works indicating that they possibly want to move cleaning and guarding services to us without the money. I also always thought in public service that funds follow function. But the indication from Public Works is that they want to provide the service that they currently render, they want to give back to us and without the baseline allocation. But
No, the legal practitioners. They are the lazy lot. Yes, yes. We are not the prisoners. The lawyers go to the courts and demand postponements. Yes.
Chairperson, I think, it is, the essence in terms of our funding request. Can we quickly give the slide, This is a summary slide. Now, again, in the context of the economic condition, why, how can you ask for 900 million and 1.2 billion and 1.5 billion? We're just putting it before you. There is various other needs, but this is things that are becoming critical. And if we don't have this situation, what do I do as the head of finance? When money is tight, the first week in March, close the system, no more payments. If this continue, I will have a situation that first week in February, I need to close the system. And then our costs will just get substantially better, bigger. So, the summary of your proposals, if I can go back to the slide and then the proposals itself. What we've done in the Word document, based on the template that you used last year, we give a clearly unpack and give you some historical information. It can be the basis for your action, maybe with your research on this. Okay. Chairperson, if I can continue, next slide, we'll give you a sense just for information, that what is our medium-term spend places. Apart from those four or five, we still sit with the problem of the Office of Chief Justice, the Treasury position, we want to confirm it to you, that the High Courts will move to the Office of the Chief Justice, it's a new department from next year. And we are, now as soon as we establish a new department, concurrently you might have certain functions there, a corporate services, an audit function, a finance practitioner. Our view is that some staff of justice needs to move to the Office of the Chief Justice, but the demands for a department, suddenly employment equity and various reports, it maybe becomes a responsibility. We need to see how we need to allocate funding and do final resource allocation to the department. Court recordings, we worked on for number five, a bench system X number of years ago, and it's about something the system needs to replace, and we don't necessarily have some money for this, and we'll see how we will reprioritize within department. Thank you. Next slide. Quick indication, what is put in here? What is a clear indication of minimum of support phrases? I can quickly jump to number 9. The Marikana Commission was not funded. It came after the Treasury budget process. Of course, we must now look at where we can get total money for this commission. And it was a causing at a particular time, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And then new information became available on new positions. Many members of the public or family members also need to attend. Now, as soon as they think, what is the cost of accommodation? So there's a number of internal, shortfalls. If we can't maintain a vacancy rate of 10%, we possibly save 120 million rand because of continuous staff and over internal promotions. Possibly I can fund some of this through savings on personnel. Psychiatric observation, the cost is just escalating assessors fees. So this is just an indication. Security for this year, we talk around about 325 to 350 million shortfall for this financial year. So this is an indication in your presence, and we need to see how we need to deal with this. Chairperson, I think this is the end of the finance report. The higher level indicating what's the position of the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Tuji, I had indicated that we'd have a comfort break now. And let's reconvene at 11:15. Can we also agree that we're not going to push ourselves, there's no need, that we had a lunch break today, the whole of last week, and we haven't had lunch breaks, we've worked through. So if we can just bear that in mind. All right, thank you. No. There's been a request from members to stop with the presentation temporarily and deal with your questions and comments. DG, I hope it's okay. Right. Mr. Jeffrey's hand is wildly waving in the back there, followed by Mr. Swart. And then Ms. Pilane Majake and Ms. Smut. No, it's up to where we've reached. So don't raise issues that are still to come. Okay? All right. Mr. Jeffrey?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I suggest what we do is that if there are issues that are going to be covered in more detail in the forthcoming presentations, that the DG or the officials don't attempt to answer it, but say, can you wait and come back to it afterwards. But I think it's useful, Chair, that we have an opportunity so that we can, it also makes it more manageable and is more restrictive. But basically questions, one issue, DG, is that I find it very difficult that we have two presentations. We have the presentation that we were sent last week, and we have the presentation that you're giving now. And it's not just a thing of minor changes. You've moved slides around and things like that. So I think please in future, I know that there may be time pressures, but please try and keep to the presentation that you give and have that finalized. And if there's anything you want to change, then do it verbally. But it just is difficult because I've got to work on the document that I was given before that I've prepared on, and then the new document that is matching what's on the slide. I'm going to be working for the old document as far as page numbers. But okay, page 11. You refer to both on 11 and page 13 to hearings for officials. Page 11, held hearings for offending officials. This is relating to irregular expenditure, and in some cases recommended further investigation and disciplinary action. Can we have figures? Okay. NPA pressed us yesterday with the numbers of officials who have been charged, that have been in fact even convicted. There's a similar figure on page 13. Take action against officials where policies and procedures not followed. How many? Because I think what we saw from the Auditor General on the third-party funds is that the problem is very often the junior official at a particular court who's receiving and paying out money and who's then not doing what they should be doing as far as reconciling after a particular period. But can we get details of that? Then on the performance indicators, I don't know if you're going to come onto that more, but I still have a major problem. We've been speaking about this for a while. Well, no, that's statistics. But on the performance indicators, you told Scopa that you'd gone over to a new performance monitoring system called TROX, or TROUX. Now, you haven't said anything to us about that. That was said to Scopa. It's from. I'm getting it from the research report. As far as then the statistics on the courts, we still have a problem of the statistics don't talk to each other. And we got that yesterday with the NPA statistics, and I think we may want to dwell in more detail on that at some point. We have been raising for some time. Then as the move to the SALU building, has the minister moved? Has everybody moved? Now, DG, I wasn't impressed when we went there at all. I know you're a big entity, I know it's a big building, but for basic things like not having the telephones connected on the date you're moving in, I don't think is acceptable. But basically, remember when the issue has come up before, there was the question of the money paid to rent the building when it was unoccupied. You're hoping to recover some of that money from public works, some of it from the landlord. Can you give us figures for how much has been spent on the rental of that building since the lease started? And how much is the state liable for? How much is justice liable for of that? Then with the Justice College or whatever it's called now, I don't see anything around training of magistrates in PAYA. Which, as you know, DG, is an issue that we've complained about. The provisions of PAYA relating to use of the magistrates' courts are not effective 11, 12 years after the passing of PAYA. Can you give us a report on that? The case flow management, I think it's again something we need to look at, because DG, from where you're sitting and to some extent from where we're sitting with reports we get, it's going well, okay, in terms of the reports we get. And when you go and visit some courts, it's not bad. But when you visit other courts, you find it's a disaster. And I have got, and I think if Chair, that could also be given to the DG, because it doesn't relate to, and it will come, I suppose, under more, should I keep that under for court services when you deal with it? Okay, let me cut back to that. Okay, that's kind of also. Then, okay, then on the last few, just on the medium-term budget policy statement and the cut, period and the cuts. Now, on page 98 of my document, that's the one entitled Proposed Budgets Cuts, Program Level 1%, 2%, and 3%. You've got there two issues. You've got there Auxiliary and Associate Services, and you reflect the cut. Now, the public protector told us that she wasn't getting a cut. She fell under that Auxiliary and Associated Services. Is that the case? And who decided that? So must the Human Rights Commission, Legal Aid South Africa take the cut and not the public protector, and therefore take a bigger cut than a 1%, 2%, 3%?
And will they be toy-toying on that idea? I mean,
well, the question of they were not toy-toying, it's a question of their services. But who decided that? And then underneath that, the judges and magistrates' salary, which also reflects the cut. Now, if this item is simply the salaries of the judges and magistrates, such magistrates as you know, DG, liberally go to court when they don't get the increase that other public office bearers get. That's not legal. You know, effectively, if you're going to be cutting the salary bill of judges and magistrates, you're going to have to be cutting not their individual salaries, but you're going to have to be cutting the numbers of judges and magistrates. So I'm concerned that that category may not be able to reflect any percentage cut at all. In fact, there would have to be a percentage increase. So, yeah, just those questions, Jen.
All right, well, I don't know how that's...
Sorry?
I don't know how that's going to work, because we're not allowed to cut the judges' salaries.
Yeah, you can't. It's not constitutional.
Yes.
But effectively, then, the only way you can implement cutting salary bill is cutting the number of judges and magistrates. And if none of them are fireable, it's very difficult, as you know, to fire them, particularly judges. If none of them pass away, then you have a problem. the other was just a general observation of I mean, to my mind, the solution in terms of the cuts is that building projects should stop, new ones. I know that the point, Mr. Johnson made the point that Treasury, I think he attributed to Treasury, wanted infrastructure projects to continue. But I think that infrastructure, when it comes to roads and bridges that generally improve the economic participation of areas of the country, are different to courts. And I think the key thing for me would be ensuring that the existing courts that we have function, and that the better place to have budget cuts would be to put new court building projects on hold, because that one can survive. Because yes, how is one going to cut the judges and magistrates' salaries? You can't unless you start getting rid of them, which is more difficult than it's very difficult. And there's also linked to, I think you had somewhere about cutting the salaries of legal aid. I mean, you know, if you don't have representation in a criminal court for an accused from some form of representation, and it's usually for the indigent accused legal aid, the trial can't continue. And we do want, as far as access to justice, indigent people to be able to have access to legal aid for civil matters. So I think those are problematic, but I don't see there's a need to build new courts while we're facing these problems. It is better to have existing courts functioning, the air conditioners working, the lifts, if it's a big court, having them operating. Because I suppose one could come onto it with when we deal with legal services, but I did want to ask, so maybe refer it to later, but it's noted, and that is, how much of a difference have the new courts made So let's take courts that were built not in the past, immediate past financial year, but the one before that. What are the figures as far as the number of cases, the statistics in those courts? What are the figures for the surrounding, the nearest court, the court whose jurisdiction they fell under? Can one see a improvement in the old court that they came from? So let's say you build a new court somewhere which wasn't there before. The court where those people were having their matters heard, is that now improving? Has that had a substantial reduction? Because just, I don't want to be on the floor too long, because sometimes it worries me, I mean, I'm not sure if anybody here is from the Northern Cape, but I remember, no, Northwest, going on an oversight visit, one of the first ones we did, it was about 2000. Yeah, I mean, Mr. Swart was there, and we went to a wonderful, it was before the Tusong centers, but it was sort of precursor, and we went to this wonderful center at a place called Tsidi La Molomo, and it was, you know, wonderful building, and it was meant to have police station, magistrates, court, etc. But it was right, it was in the middle of nowhere. And it seemed that the most people generally benefiting were people from across the river, which was in Botswana. And I just, maybe I'm wrong, but the sense I got is somebody had a wonderful idea, but wonderful ideas are not necessarily that practical.
Alright. Mr. Swift. I remember correctly, this was a convenient place to get extra ideas as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and I asked the question yesterday to the Auditor General, Chair. And it was a difficult question. Generally speaking, has there been an improvement? And clearly for me, there has been an improvement. If we look at page 9, where you've got Auditor General opinion of the budget count over 4 financial years, you can clearly see there. And so we do need to commend the DG and the department on that. Yes, there are a lot of issues that we'll unpack as we go along, but it is very important to see that there is a genuine progress is being made, and to commend the very hard work that has been done by all officials in this regard. I think the main challenge will be, as you point out there, the balancing system and controls with performance against predetermined objectives. And we look forward to, from Mr. Johnson, the third party fund being an unqualified audit. I remember you at one stage saying you've got a certain time and you might have to, you'd be fired if you don't do it, but clearly that's not going to happen. Remember that? Remember? And I think that by next year we would look forward to that. So well done in those regards. Can I then just ask a few specific questions? And DG, on the South Gauteng court, and you might want to deal with that later when you deal with court services, but just what is the situation there? Revisit it and just give us an update on the records, on the charges against officials, the security, those complaints from the deputy judge president that were raised there. Mr. Johnson, thank you for your alluding us to the entertainment issue, and I'm sure you'd like to respond to that as well on our goods and services. Then when one looks at your critical shortages, and we are sympathetic, we have already, during the budget vote earlier this year, indicated that you are very sympathetic to the shortfall. I think at that stage we were talking about 600 million, wasn't it, Chair? 680? And we indicated that we would be looking at that later, which is now. So thank you for your detailed response, and I'm sure the committee will be taking this up further with relative. The next step in the process is to make a submission to the Portfolio Committee on Finance, I think, whatever that process will be, but we will engage on that as we... But to unpack, then, needs. One of the issues that is of a concern to me is why does this department have to pay for commissions of inquiry? Surely, that's traditional, but if the presidency calls a commission of inquiry, how are you able to budget that? Here, on your critical budget pressures, arms deal at 40 million for 1 year. Marikana is 75 million. And whilst you support those commissions, surely the president, there should be something in place that the presidency approaches Treasury that has got funds for that. And why should you have to run around trying to find it? That is something we definitely need to find a way of assisting the department in that regard.
You're not really looking to them to respond to questions.
No, I'm saying it's an issue we need. We need to be aware of the more contentious issue of the assessment of the court decision, the CC and SCA. Now that figure is not big, but it seems from what we heard from the DG, it's a bit open-ended. The tender is there, and it could be longer, it could be more complex. What he needs to consider, and yes, there's a policy decision has been taken to do that, which wasn't necessarily supported by various people, but if that to be prioritized when you've got such pressure, and surely if it is going to be done, you need to ring-fence it and say, that's the amount that's going to be sent. I'd like your response on those few issues, but we definitely need to see how we can assist the department, particularly that there is no substantial increase in capacity that has been given with the budget cuts, the haircuts. And on the issue of the finance minister saying haircuts, that's the 1% from the baseline, haircuts, as opposed to cutting the grass. I prefer to cut the grass. There's a magistrate at the Child Justice Centre. Remember, Chairman, we visited him. He cuts the grass himself. Now, I'm not expecting judicial officers to do that, but it shows the heart of the certain people involved, him and the staff and the prosecutors, they maintain the place themselves. So there's a real buy-in to that. Thank you, Didi.
All right. Let's be
Jack. Thanks, just to say that it's quite encouraging to see the improvement in terms of qualification of reports, and we're hoping to see much more improvement, including third-party funds for the future. You're getting that sorted out. One thing that's actually still important is the area of performance. I'm sure probably along the way you'd actually indicate how measurable your indicators are. I remember last time we were here, we're actually saying that the indicators are not really the type you can measure, and that's very important in terms of assessment of performance. In your annual report under finances on page 79 under vehement, you spend too much on goods and services. I'm just interested to know what are these goods and services that you're spending too much for. So you diverted 19 million. And I think 19 million is a lot of money that has been diverted. Just give us an idea of what monies are those. You indicated that you've completed your analysis of judgment for the Concord and the SEA. You had a report? I'm sure that it's not ready yet. Okay. So I'll reserve that question. And in terms of the third-party funds, you said you've just decided to audit from 2009. What I would like to ask you is there nothing that is clearly, that is problematic previously? That is clearly, you know, if anybody can see that there was something that was wrong in that area. Because then if you decide to audit from 2019, that gets left out without it being investigated. That's my concern in relation to this question that I'm putting forward. One thing that I want to support, which Honorable Swart has actually indicated, is the whole idea of not continuing with new buildings in order for us, as you do the haircut, for us to continue with running the present costs that are available, so that we manage to maintain the standards and avoid all other previous problems that we've experienced. And indeed, I would also like to know about the offsite storage, because for the Gauteng South High Court, there was this big problem of offsite storage that was almost like done half, and the company, was it Medivac, that was actually doing work, couldn't continue because the money got finished. If you can just brief us as to the situations. And in terms of your suggestions for reduction, your priorities on page 43, I think they are quite sound, except for number 5, which I do still continue to believe that it lends the responsibility of public works. Maybe when that responsibility shifted, it needs to actually be shifted to financial implication, be taken into consideration. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, if I understood the presentation on the PPF correctly, what you're basically doing is what the Auditor General advised, which was to to put in place the basic controls and proper record management, including the daily controls, I'm sure, and at each course. But what I don't understand is what will be, and I missed it, I'm sorry, just fill in, what is it that will be in the TPF bill that you are writing? What model, in fact, are you setting up if you are basically just putting in proper controls and capturing records? One of your proposals is the non-implementation of the protection of personal information. The answer is no, it must be implemented. You will find that quite apart from its other virtues, such as the protection of people's constitutional rights, which is not up for argument, I believe that it will have an excellent effect on IT governance in this country. It has been the case in other countries that privacy legislation, in fact, triggered the proper securing and governance of databases on computers. And I think it would be a terrible mistake not to do so. I mean, I had an exchange with the Auditor General's representative on this, and he agreed with me in every respect that the state of administration in this country is probably ascribable at its basis to the fact that we don't have proper computer systems. So we won't allow it, that bill must be implemented. I think that there is virtue in the idea of perhaps stopping building programs, but could you, to assist us to think about this some more, when we get to that section, give us an indication of how far Polokwane is, how far Nelspruit is. If there's one easy candidate for dropping, it is the assessment of the Crown Court and Supreme Court of Appeal judgments. It means absolutely nothing. Nothing will come of it. You know that as well as I do. And of course, it's a very tiny amount. I forget how much, 2 million that you've set aside. But then you can start your haircuts right there. I want to ask you something about the court, which you may tell me to raise under another category. Let me just first bring this to your attention. Mr. Hoopmeyer yesterday with the NPA told us about something that is, in his words, making them hysterical and that will make all of us hysterical if we do have to end up voting this money. And that is that a job evaluation took place in all departments in the late 90s into 2000. The DPSA regulations at that time said that if the evaluations were done and if the budgets were available, people have to be paid. The NPA has fought this up and down courts. It has lost everywhere, including in the Labour Appeal Court. The FEA declined even to hear the case. And the financial implications are at least 27 million worth, and I think ran into 1.5 billion if you start applying them retrospectively. Now, I just want to bring to your attention an email I've received, and I'll give you a copy, from suffering civil servant, who says that the performance, and my question is this the same thing that Mr. Hoffmeyer was talking about, or is it something different? The performance assessment of most of the senior management in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development were not finalized during the period of Mr. Menzies and Benani as Director General. Since then, no progress has been made to finalize the situation. Many of us are suffering financially, emotionally, and materially, as the performance assessment is necessary for performance awards, pay progression, pension benefits. Some of us are owed more than 300,000 for the period since 2003. Our pleas of desperation in this regard are ignored. Some of our colleagues have died, families are suffering, and so forth. And I'll give you a copy of this, but what I'd like to know is, are these two things in any way comparable? Now, can I, just on the courts, you've indicated the court, the High Courts are moving to the Office of the Chief Justice. Now, either you can tell me we can deal with this under Program 2, Court Services, or we can deal with it here. But my question is just this. Clearly you're doing this in anticipation of the new institutionally independent judicial branch of the state, which we have begun to legislate and which has my absolutely wholehearted support. But are you not running ahead of yourself? Surely we have to create the independent administrative agency before you do this, or what is the implication of what you're doing? Or surely we have to go to the Judicial Council before you do this. Or which provision currently in the Superior Courts Act are you relying on to do this? As far as I know, all we're setting up is the Fora, which the Chief Justice and the JDs will run in each province. So just tell me, the direction of travel is, of course, where we want to go, but on what basis are you doing this?
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I just want to tell the DG that, as I said in the tea break, my statement would have been a lot from last year if I didn't think she was doing a good job, but unfortunately the department is still not complying with 72% of its targets, and that is true, and you admitted as much. But I'll be delighted if I could be the first one to congratulate you next year on an unqualified award. I want to support the point about Nocana. I mean, to expect the department under the conditions in which you're working at the moment to fund another $75 million, I think is unfair. I think our hope as a committee, we will support a request for assistance from Treasury. And I also would think that it would be equally important for you to have as much money as is for the public protector. So if she's not having to take a cut, I think it's fair that you also should have to. As far as the staff are concerned, I'm happy to hear that you are addressing the issue. As you know, it is a problem. Can you confirm that you are in fact relying any longer on the NPS statistics? Because I have heard that is the case. And if so, what exactly are you, I mean, how far have you got in your discussions with them to reach an agreement as to how you're going to report? And other point I made yesterday to the NPA, if you could also try and assist, is give us a full picture so we know, are we making progress or not? Give us a full number of cases that are referred to the court, a full number of cases that are withdrawn from the court and actually proceed to prosecution and get convictions. Don't try and make it look good, because we know that you can make stats look as good as you want to. As far as, security, I would certainly not support any cuts there either. I think it's a very, very big problem. In a number of cases, we have complaints from particularly magistrates regarding their personal safety, that they have shared facilities with the public, as prisoners and all kinds of other things. And I don't know, is there any way perhaps that you can address that issue without having to spend a fortune just by means of sort of changes to buildings that don't cost a lot of money as far as accesses are concerned, that kind of thing? Because that is quite often what we complain, what we have complaints about. Then as far as, I was quite shocked, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but are you saying, Mr. Johnson, that Treasury is telling you not to pay municipality-seeking services and rather build infrastructure? Because that's what I was trying to say, and if it's true, then I'm quite horrified. Because you said the number one priority is infrastructure, so if you can't pay your rent and taxes, then tough luck. You had the presentation a while ago regarding a lot of money that was unaccounted for that you were looking into. I don't think it was third party funds. It was other money that from long ago, before 1994, I think even. Can you give us any further progress on whether you've managed to ascertain what that was caused by and what you're doing about it? And then the other problem that seems to come up over and over again is, and not even in only industries, but is public works departments. And I would really like you to tell us here today, honestly, what exactly are you experiencing with them as far as the cooperation is concerned to build new courts to maintain existing courts? Because for courts to have, as one that I visited quite some time ago, which I have addressed with the DG a long time ago, for prosecutors to have to close courts at lunchtime because there's sewage running through the Paris corridors and things like that is just unacceptable. Can you please tell us what are the problems and what do we need to do to sort them out? Can I also just clarify the accrual problems? Are you saying that the accrual and the late payment of outstanding the money was because you ran out of budget? Is that why? And also magistrate salaries. I think you're going to run into, they'll literally be toying if you start reducing, first of all, their salaries or their, as you all know, there's about two court cases on the go at the moment from magistrates regarding the fact that they still haven't had a salary determination. They don't want us to approve their increase this year until they've addressed us on the Independent Remuneration Board's recommendation. They claim that the salaries haven't been adjusted accordingly. And also, there's just no way you can cut folks either. We don't have enough magistrates as it is to deal with the way that there is, and it will just increase more and more the backlog. So, that's it for now. Thank you.
Just in relation to a question raised by the Honourable Ms. Smuts about Bulugwane and Nelson Street, my question is slightly different. You've probably given us this information. What is the target date for completion?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members, for the question. So, this is the one part of the visit to this committee that I truly don't enjoy. But having said that, we will do the best we can. I will propose that we proceed on this basis. There are questions, in pretty much most of the questions, we are going to be able to respond, but then amend our responses either tomorrow or the following day, just to augment the responses. And then in others, of course, we would, the information is here which in the drop-down slide, so we will show it. And maybe that's the best approach to then, especially dealing with issues of budget and the proposals, because there may be probably a miscommunication on our part in what we are proposing, and so I figured that we might have a slight problem there. But the rest of the questions, I think we are going to do best we can. So at this stage, I'm going to request my colleague to start with the responses, and I'm going to suggest that we do it this way, colleague. In terms of the finance questions, which are finance related, I'm going to request that Mr. Johnson respond to that, and I'll probably assist him in that. The systems, in particular reporting systems, I'm going to request my colleague Lebohang to respond. Bahia, I'll deal with, and then we'll page flow, we will leave for tomorrow in the main, because it requires detail. Again, on budget cuts for the PP, judges and all the wonderful people, I will leave for the finance. I think we can clarify certain issues there. Yeah, all right, and then perhaps we will get to a point where we will reassess how are we moving. So starting with Mr. Johnson, chief on the hearing. Oh, sorry, before I do that, can I deal with the process issue? Our apologies on the presentation, and can I contextualize what happened? We had prepared a presentation, the very first presentation that we submitted. We submitted that presentation. We then checked with the secretariat, I think a day or two later. We were advised that we needed to do it slightly differently to show program 1, program 2, program 3 for different dates. We thought that presentation would achieve that, but we were encouraged to do it differently, which we did. And I think that's where the difference is. And we apologize, but we explained it that way. So my apology though for that. We were on time as well. Of course, time was limited. Really it was. But we worked frantically to submit. But again, for the inconvenience it has caused the Honourable Member, our deepest apology.
Thank you, Committee Member and Chairperson. I think I'm a bit vulnerable now because next media statement will say the CFO say cut positions. The basic men of, you know, before the deadline, Chairperson, we are getting this year 150 million men for appointment of additional judges and magistrates. Next year, 200 million. What I'm saying, everybody come to the party, instead of using the 150 million to appoint 150 judges and magistrates, maybe for now, reduce their provision. It's not touching existing conditions of services. So I think it is important that hopefully the message comes clear, it's not a reduction of salaries, conditions of service. The second thing in relation to the cuts of the public protector. The public protector, because they're a constitutional institution and the Human Rights Commission, they engage directly with National Treasury for funding. At the end of the day, Treasury says you, justice, and totality must cut the burden. Treasury must decide and say that the greater portion will come from justice and maybe the constitutional institutions are not effective. Is it fair? I don't think it is fair, but at the end of the day, they've got their own engagement with the secretary. In relation to hearings, I mean, Mr. Jeffrey, I personally chair the hearings for irregular expenditure. And normally the current process is, or the process last year was, manager BDGs comes in and explain what happened. I'm also going to summarize statistics for you, but they do give for me a chairperson of the supply chain management, the budget adjudication committee, we issue warnings to them, verbal warnings, because somebody did not obtain the quotations, or the wrong person signed the approval of the expenditure director instead of a chief director. Now, it is just changing the behavior, being in some minister, some education. The next time around, this year, if they continue, then there might be substantial action. But I can give you a report on what we do during the process of condonement and the official hearings. In terms of environments of shifting money from goods and services, goods and services is a substantial blind item, possibly now 2.9 billion within the Department of Justice. What we've done is we want to confirm we've run out of money at the end of financial year. We close the system early, just part of cash flow management, any other business may do the same. And when there were savings on the personnel budget, we needed to serve some of the savings to cut, especially cover, you will see it in the budget review report, especially government shortfalls on security. In terms of PPF, what is a glaring picture of PPF? I think in 1994, in 1999, in 2007, this was the one picture that I can see. It was the picture stays the same. This particular shortfall in PPF. It is 63 million of shortages and then overpayments and dishonored checks at the time when we still issue checks. Now, is it our balance sheet? The number for the past 3 years and my assessment of the 3 years that we concluded, it is 79 million, increasing with 500,000 is now nearly 18 million. But we need to get to the solution of everybody says historical problems, but we said they're not just going to write off because it's all. Please go and investigate. So I think the fund of the 3 billion rand, the fund is still sound on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, 240,000 people are getting their maintenance payment. The system is working, but we just need to get that one glaring thing in terms of funding and solve it going forward. If I quickly can address the issue of Mr. Swart, of travel and subsistence and entertainment. Of this 2.6 billion rand budget expenditure on goods and services, 18% we spent on traveling and subsistence. Now, as much as correctional service has, the feeding of prisoners as a core cost driver. For us, operations of courts is a cost driver. As indicated before, today we've got the High Court operating in Oudtshoorn, 400 kilometers from here. Staff needs to move their accommodation. There's cost allowances associated with this. Many courts in the High Court in Mafeking deliver services just north of Pretoria in Themba. So the basic point is, it is a cost driver. If they get, of this 447 million travel and subsistence, 76% is spent at core services. At 76.5%. 330 million. The rest is in your other areas of justice colleagues. You got new piece of legislation, new organization, then you must bring your staff and members of your judiciary and bring them to particular areas maybe to train them. Finance will spend also on a big amount, but as part of the work that we do, we travel and subsistence in many ministers. Of course, strangely, our expenditure on our travel and subsistence increased with 3%, just about 3% compared to the previous year. Whilst we know what happened with the cost of accommodation and cost of transport in general. Because, as soon as this increase in price of petrol, the part of transport will ask me concurrently. So, I think this is some of the questions that I would want to address. We will be here and we will either get to the hearing or later submit formal answers to some of the questions that you've raised. Thank you.
Thanks, DG. We will also call members that in the 2011 management report that was issued by Auditor General, we requested that we have to implement an electronic management system that will assist us with the performance information. And in the last financial year, we duly found a system and began to implement it. And as we speak now, we are fully implemented. We have nominated users from different areas. We have trained those users, and this continuously happens as people come and go. So that the system is fully functional and is working. In this financial year, we are even looking very closely at the usage. And as we already said in our slides, we will ensure that we call members to we call staff to account where the usage is not as good as thing. But we are quite happy with the progress that we made. The system fully works, and we are okay. But the bigger problem with performance information is not the electronic system per se. It's often with the quality of the performance information. And I think AG would also give a sense that what you know the information that you put into a system is okay if people do, but the quality of it is more important, and that is one of our bigger areas where we are focusing on in the current financial year, that we've got proper validation processes in place, that we also within our unit check and double check and make sure that everything is done. So that to us is a bigger problem. And also back to the SHU system, there are other enhancements that we think would assist us, and we have been in touch with the department around how to enhance the system, and we will be doing that. But we are very happy that the system is fully functional. But the Auditor General has indicated that for the current financial year, they will audit the system, and they will give an opinion on whether it's working well or not. So maybe then we should wait for that response in a few months' time. We will get their independent view of how the system is working. Thank you.
No, thank you, and Chair. There were two questions that I would like to respond to. The one question is whether we are running ahead of legislation in transferring high courts to the Office of Chief Justice. I think one has an appreciation of how it could be read that way. But in our case, at least there were two main developments. The first development really was that there was an agreement, there was a memorandum of understanding signed between the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, as well as the Office of the Chief Justice, on transferring certain functions on a pilot basis to the Office of the Chief Justice in order to strengthen the office and as part of our contribution to enhancing the independence of the judiciary. Now, in that agreement, one of the things we agreed to was that the establishment of the Constitutional Court, the establishment of the Supreme Court of Appeal, the Secretariat of the Judicial Services Commission, and at the time we were looking at the Rules Board and the Secretariat of the Magistrates Commission to move to the Office of the Chief Justice. We later came to focus at least on three, on the establishment of the Supreme Court of Appeal, the establishment of the Constitutional Court itself, as well as the Secretariat of the Judicial Service Commission, merely because there were certain complications that we are experiencing with the Magistrates Commission. People have lived all their lives in Pretoria, they are based in Pretoria, and so on. As well as the Rules Board, we decided to delay that because I think there are discussions going on between Department of Justice and Constitutional Court. So where the process is in terms of implementing that memorandum of understanding, towards end of September, I had consulted with all the unions, I had spoken to all the staff, everybody was in agreement. The only thing that the unions wanted from me was to give an undertaking in writing that when staff in the Supreme Court of Appeal and Constitutional Court move to the Office of the Chief Justice, they will not be prejudiced in terms of their conditions of service. So that undertaking I've given it in writing, but the unions were supposed to sign their part of the agreement. They've now postponed the meeting to the 19th of October to do that so that the process can then go through. But as part of that, we were then consulted by Treasury, both as Justice and Office of the Chief Justice, regarding the budget of both departments in the context of the finalization of Superior Court's bill. What Treasury wanted to know is the readiness of the Office of the Chief Justice to assume the responsibilities anticipated in the Superior Court's bill. Then Treasury made the point to us that, you know, in terms of what we see, in terms of implementation of Memorandum of Understanding, it will not be sufficient just to have a budget only for Constitutional Court and Supreme Court of Appeal, because now that OCA has been portrayed as a department, it's better that as a department we give you more substantial responsibilities in anticipation of the finalization of the Superior Court's bill. And in that context, they were of the view that it should not only be the Supreme Court of Appeal and the Constitutional Court establishments that must be on the OCJ, but high courts as well. So what they then said was that we need to prepare to assume responsibility for high courts as Office of the Chief Justice from the 1st of April next year, so that, you know, the burden of high courts, given the role that is anticipated for the Chief Justice of the Superior Court, should now be shouldered by the Office of the Chief Justice. Now, the Office of the Chief Justice has been doing a number of things to get itself ready for the 1st of April. First of all, in terms of posts, interviews have been held for the post of head of department. Competency assessments have been done. I think in the last week, State Security was just signing off the assessments of security clearances of the two candidates so that the decision is made. So, you know, to all intents and purposes, I think there will be a new head of department. I think should be starting by 1st of December, by 1st of January, I think. 1st of December, 1st of January, because it's also a cabinet process. So, on our part, as OCJ, there are a number of things that we have done in preparation for the vote. For example, apart from filling key posts, senior management posts, and the only disappointment in this regard, for example, was the filling of the post of the chief financial officer. We had recruited somebody, we had gone through interviews and so on. Unfortunately, we had a problem with salary negotiations because this person approached us having a number of offers. So he was testing us. So I think we're at a stage where we now decided that we have to head hand for a CFO because those negotiations were not successful. But on the part of the Office of the Chief Justice, in terms of readiness, apart from filling key posts, for example, we have registered with the Government Employees Pension Fund, we have registered with the South African Revenue Service, and we have obtained a tax reference number. We have opened a number of accounts. We have opened a CMG account, a deposit account, an interdepartmental account, a petty cash account, a charges account. We have a number of policies that we have already worked on. We have an asset management policy, cash management policy, payroll, financial reporting, accounts payable, debtors management. We already have delegations on which we have been operating. We have policies to manage unauthorized, irregular focus and wasteful expenditure. We have dealt with delegation of authorities, supply chain management, and so on and so forth. There are just other areas we are finalizing, like issues of gifts, management of gifts, fleet management, and so on and so on. So I don't think the intention was really to run ahead of legislation. I think the issue is that we are responding to Treasury's call to say, look, given the developments on Superior Court Bill, we anticipate that you should have a budget vote on the 1st of April. In fact, we are supposed to have had a budget vote already this financial year. But unfortunately, our state of readiness was not what it should be. So, as you can see, we have now run full speed to ensure the state of readiness. So, I think that's with regard to OCJ. With regard to the question of off-site storage in South Gauteng High Court, Honourable Member Majaki is correct to say that there were problems. And it's essentially the problem, cash problems, the accruals problem that have been raised before. It was really part of our, you know, cash flow management problem. We had a situation last year where the storage facility we were using for the files, the service provider thereof couldn't be paid. Payments were delayed. I'm happy, however, to report that those payments were settled and the project is running as normal. I think in terms of digitizing the court records, we are probably between 40-50% at the moment. In terms of the project as a whole, I think in terms of the five courts, the Cape High Court, the South Gauteng High Court, the North Gauteng High Court, the Johannesburg Magistrate Court, as well as the Durban Magistrate Court, I would say that progress has been much better in the Cape High Court as well as the Durban Magistrate Court, simply because their volumes are more reasonable compared to the other three. So we think that by mid-December, we should have been done those and focused our efforts on North Gauteng, South Gauteng, as well as Johannesburg Magistrate. So we think that by the end of the financial year, we should have completed phase one of the project. Thanks.
Can you, please, can you with the same address accessibility? Because you know they were taken to off-site story, and it was difficult for judges to also access the records.
No, the issue of accessibility has been addressed, in my view. I haven't received any major complaints from the court managers. It's just that we should just increase the speed of finalizing all the records. But there has not been any major problems of accessibility since that time when we sorted out the service provider, as far as I'm aware.
We were told by the DJP that were left on our visit today. Wait, what is the date of that? No, you were saying since the service provider was appointed. Is that, when was that?
My understanding is that this problem was a problem, I think, around January, February, towards the end of the financial year. But I think since June, shortly after the beginning of this financial year, that problem has been settled. I'm not aware of any complaint from the court at the moment. But I can even do follow-up after this meeting.
It was a problem when the man wasn't being paid, so he locked the warehouse gate. That was when it was a problem.
Yeah, but that's
what the fellow said, was frankly a constitutional problem. But he then got paid, and yeah. Maar je moet ook iemand betalen, hè? Die man moet ook zijn geldjes krijgen. Ja. Ja. So yeah, just on Dr. Zavir's answer on this, do you want us to take that forward under court services? See, I'm just worried. We're going to have to put this out in the Superior Courts building. Because it's not, look, we're creating an independent branch of state with its own administration. It's frankly improper to create a government department. Now, at the time, I read all the correspondence between the Ministers of Justice and DPSA. It was all beautifully done. It was like a solution when you're creating a new thing and there's no other device or modality to use. But what is happening now, because the Treasury is worried about this, that, and the other, is that you are now, you're perpetuating this government department for, and the thing is a contradiction in terms, a government department for the Chief Justice. You're perpetuating, you're getting a tax number, you're signing up the staff for the gifts, and so that it is now growing like a mushroom. And I think what we need to do is, we have, during various deliberations on the Superior Court Act, we have looked at that section, and I did ask our legal drafters to, I think it should then be written differently so that we establish the office properly by law. If that is going to now create other problems for you with your all the administrative stuff you've put in place, then you'll have to redo them. But we can't perpetuate, in my view, a government department for the head of the judiciary. But I would think the solution would lie in our hands, but there might be some consequences for you.
My understanding is that the only way of creating some kind of entity is a government department, which is done by proclamation. No, or by law, yes. The only way an independent body can be set up is by law. Now, my understanding is the law is the, what's it called, the administration of independent, yeah. But now, when is that bill coming? And why is that taking so long? I think those are the issues. I mean, will we get that, will we be able to pass that law before the end of this term of office of Parliament?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Just as an intelligent woman, I try and stay away from this question because it's a very difficult one. But I think I really want to concur with the honourable member, Mr. Jeffries, on his articulation of what the phase process was intended to be, and commit to coming back and responding probably tomorrow, on day three, on the legislation, we have to go back, regroup, and then have an intelligent answer for that. So that's where I would wish to leave the matter and until day three. Hoping that day three will not come. Okay. Just very quickly on the question of Palu, we wish to give you a more detailed response and tomorrow. We have a drop down slide on it as well, which we would want to speak to tomorrow as well. But just to give a sense, indeed it was, we've already apologized so many times that we could have managed that project, and now that are dead, we acknowledge. So I just wanted to reiterate that. But to the extent that everybody has moved to Salu, indeed everybody who ought to have moved to Salu has moved to Salu. In fact, Salu is fully occupied right now. We probably in some areas are already struggling because Salu is overly populated at this stage, especially in some areas like the floors from the ground upwards. Maybe the offices that we still have a little bit of a breathing space in the ministries, in the ministry and DG's office, our offices, we are quite tight already in Salu.
Can I ask, the buildings that you vacated and that are now vacant rather than belonging to any other government department, have any rent being paid to them?
Two things in response to that question, and again, that too is part of a written response that we'll provide tomorrow, is that the momentum building which we vacated, in other words, which executive management and the ministry vacated to Salu, is not going to stand empty. As we speak, the Commission of Inquiry, the Marikana Commission of Inquiry, is actually using that building. And we felt, in spite of all the independence discussions and all of that, we felt, given the fact that the tenure of this commission is relatively short, it is not prudent for us to go and hire a building. And therefore, we decided to use it. But as we had said previously, we were already crammed in momentum. So people are going to, the new people who are joining the department are moving into momentum primarily, but in areas where we are really, really squashed, we will be moving post-Marikana, we will be moving to the offices higher up, like the Ministry of the DG's office and all of that, after the commission is vacated. So it's not standing empty as it were. In fact, when we became aware that there was going to be a commission, we decided to stop all migration in the building to allow for the commission to happen. 6 months later, we will then retake the occupation, because that lease, I think, could be used for another 2 years. So we can procure additional building.
I just follow up on that. Why did we not use that then for the Armsville Commission? Why didn't we use that for the Armsville Commission then? Because, I mean, that was half the cause of the day in the Armsville Commission, that they didn't have accommodation.
You see, where the Arms Commission, or I guess the Strategy Packages Commission, there were other issues. That commission, in terms of size, is slightly bigger, in terms of just the personnel that supports that commission, firstly. Secondly, and you can tell by the number of commissioners that are in that commission, secondly, and I think even more critically, this commission, part of its responsibility is to house all the documents that are in contention. And the housing of that level of documentation, which I was told, is three ship container load type documents,
And of course, we could never have housed those documents in Momentum. And of course, once the commission is in place, the commissioners must have access to these documents at a click of a finger, if the finger clicks. So that's basically it. And that is why we couldn't have them in Momentum. But there were other issues as well of proximity, and we must understand, unlike the Marikana Commission, whose I guess mandate is quite clear, here you are talking about a commission whose issues have been running for years and years and years and have kind of messed up the environment as it were, and we didn't want it to be in the Department of Justice working with us pretty much every day, and that was the reason. Thank you. And we move to why have we not, or are we training on by the magistrate? This is one of the areas that perturbed us, and we had extended discussions with the former and the current chief justice, because in the establishment of FAJE, and we got tied up in the government of FAJE rather than the issue of actual physical training of the judiciary. One of the fundamentals that was going to underpin FAJE was the movement of people from Justice College, the training of the judiciary, the lower courts judiciary, to FAJE. Now, because that didn't happen immediately, because we were hung up on government, it meant that training had to be delayed. In other words, general training, whether in Bahia or anything else, was in fact delayed. And that is the fact. Towards the end of last year, I think it was, our minister, the chief justice, and everybody involved got themselves involved, and we ironed out what we felt were government issues, as I indicated earlier in the presentation, and the chief justice started with the training processes in FAJE. Now, of course, this has resulted in us being extremely behind in terms of FAJE training, and that is all that is. In fact, to the extent that FAJE was not able to train, there was an agreement that Justice College does a little bit of, not a little bit, train a number of magistrates, even though we had already moved 10 million from Justice College to FAJE. We still trained some magistrates. They do remember when we get to the slide, and maybe Lebu can quickly show that slide, where Justice College then did train magistrates. Indeed, in the actual training, in my recollection, I can't recall now verbatim what is written in the slide, but in my recollection, we haven't segmented that the training of the number of magistrates that we train was specifically for Bahia or what exactly, and that information you can find out today and when we present. Oh, okay. But yeah, please, if you can. Thank you.
Okay, leading Justice College. I'm Sajay now.
Sajay.
Yeah.
It's a long story, but we'll talk about it. If you look at the level of judiciary that we trained, which was unbudgeted for unplanned because we had already moved the money, it's that 656 where the magistrates that we trained called it out of schedule, as it were. And that's the point I wanted to raise. What I will have to go and do overnight is to just double check what exactly did we train them on. And I know that even as the Department of Justice, we did conduct a number of workshops. It wasn't training, but it was workshops that we conducted on a number of issues. But the specific ones that we conducted workshops on were on child justice as well as, I think, sexual offences. It wasn't by year. And we'll double-check that and then speak to the number.
Those sections of IEA can operate until the magistrates are trained. And PAIA was passed in the year 2000. We're now in 2012. Your slide does not reflect how many magistrates were trained of the 6,207. But definitely under the indicators, there is no PAIA. And it just seems to me as though it is not a priority for the department. You shake your head, but you know, if it were a priority, it would be there. The Sexual Offences Act, the Child Justice Act, are not dependent on magistrates being trained before they're implemented. PAYA is, okay? And once PAYA is, once the magistrates are trained, then magistrate courts can be used to adjudicate PAYA disputes. So I find it really completely unacceptable that we are now on year 12. And I think that the fact that there's no indication of PAYA, this was raised last year in the BRR process, a year later, that nothing has been done. And it needs to be done so that the law can be implemented. So I think, DG, what I would like, and hopefully we can get the committee to support it and have it as part of the House resolution, is can you give us a date when those sections of PAYA will be implemented?
On the subject, it is true that around 2000 it was the fashion to write into the law. But the law does say, doesn't it, that they have to be trained. It's a terribly silly thing. It happened with Fajal Paya and the quality. There were other provisions written in which were worse and frankly unconstitutional, and 2 years later were appealed to my great joy, and I said, I told you so. And those were the ones that said that a certain high official or someone could designate which justice or magistrates might hear these cases, which is unconstitutional. However, look, in those days, that used to be written into the law. It is there. We have now not repealed it when we reworked the PAYA. So I support the Honourable Jeff. That thing has got to be done. It is shocking. And it is part of the reason for the fact that PAYA, our rights of access to information, are observed mainly in the British in this country. It's one of the big contributing reasons. However, now having said down PAYA, Chair, isn't this a nice place for a haircut? Because the idea of training judges and magistrates is a little bit unique. One understands that it's maybe a nice to have, but that you're putting in place all these rules that address big social problems. But you know, providing office is not supposed to be training, you're supposed to be appointing people who can do the job. Not so. So you've given us the numbers of people and suffering the training, but what are the amount of money involved, and isn't that a nice place for a cut, with the exception of the PAYA? Well, you never used to train people, you people who could do the job and you appointed them. Which other think you trained and set it?
So on that note, I mean, I can't believe that any legislation was passed that depended on the training of magistrates before it's implemented. And I would suggest that it's far easier to actually bring an amendment to PAYA to take that out so those provisions can be implemented. And I completely agree. We should not be appointing people who cannot read the law. I mean, for goodness sake, you read the law, you apply it. What's the difficult part?
I'm surprised at the chair's comment. I mean, she works very closely with the magistrates on the Magistrates Commission. But I think that training, I mean, it's in the law. The other surprise I have over Ms. Schaefer is that, you know, we recently passed the Protection of Personal Information Bill in this committee where we amended sections of PAYA. She didn't raise at that point that she thought it was valid that we should remove those training sections. Oh, she didn't know because she hadn't read the law.
The point is noted, and we'll come back with a plan of how to fix the problem from our side. So the problem is noted. Just a small issue around salary cuts in legal aid. It's not incumbent upon us to do the salary cuts, and I really want to clarify, just like the magistrates and the judiciary. But when we went through the MTEC process, it was ourselves, it was NPA, and it was Legal Aid South Africa, the CEO. One of the issues she raised in the MTEC process was that Legal Aid has taken as much cuts as it can, and it's implementing the extremest of cost-saving measures. And if now they have to be exposed to a further another 1-3% cut over the next 3-year period. That can only translate to cuts on salaries and or cuts on staff. That is what she said. So we are showing you the implications that if and quite honestly, we were supporting legal aid even at the entire process, and even in my meeting with Treasury on Saturday past, in finalizing that process, that the Mincom part must finalize now. I was still saying, is there nothing that can be done for legal aid? So indeed we support them. We understand the extremity of the situation they are facing, and we do not believe they should be cut, but unfortunately this is not our call to make. And maybe it's not coming out clearly in the presentation.
Whose call is it?
We have an instruction which says everybody in government shall cut one. the exception is between National Treasury and the Public Protector. It certainly would not necessarily. Yes. Yes. 1-3% over the 3-year period. And we just have to find a mechanism in our own budget to reprioritize and repackage our business to suit or to meet the budget cut. I know National Treasury, and this is a little bit unfair, because I also know the National Treasury, even as we were given that instruction, we raised a number of issues with National Treasury Department, as well as legal aid, as well as everybody else. I would imagine I didn't appear together with the Public Protector, because Chapter 9s were clustered separately, so I wasn't part of that. They were clustered separately, they appeared separately. I appeared with NPA and legal aid in our class, so I can only speak to what happened then. So what is fair, though, to present to this Honourable House, that National Treasury didn't just say cut and then look the other way. They are continuing to do the work to say, if it is not 1-3% cut, what would it be? So they continue to do that work, which they must present to the Mincom board, and the final outcome we will all know around November or so. But of course, they have to shake the tree for the outcome, otherwise there will be no outcome, because all of us will go to Treasury and say, sorry, we are too tired, we can't do the cut. So I can't speak for the Public Protector, because I wasn't in that meeting. And all I am for Public Protector is the postbox from National Treasury to Public Protector in moving the money. Yes, thank you. Then we move to how much of a difference is building of new courts been? We haven't done that study, and it really would be presumptuous of us to give you a response or to give a response to this Honourable House. But it's one thing that we probably program to will have to start thinking about, and we probably will have to put some terms of reference to do an assessment, an initial assessment. We've never really done that assessment, in all honesty. I'm not responding to why I'm paying for the commission. I'm not responding to that.
Maybe you could tell us, you get this, okay, the existing arrangement is there's a commission, and it seems to be that it must come from your budget, not from, what do they call it, the sort of funds in Treasury for emergencies.
Contingency reserves.
Mm. It must come from your budget. Mm. So what does that mean, that you've got to cut to other things elsewhere? Because it does, I agree with Mr. Swart, it doesn't really make sense. It's a contingency. So you do a budget, we breathe down your neck to say, are you following your budget? And then you're expected to find a few million, you know, from somewhere. It doesn't seem right that it's not a contingency.
Okay. In trying to respond to that, there are two things that happen. There's an element of the observation that I agree with, because when a commission is announced, we have to spring into action and try and find immediate money. But after that immediate process, we then go to Treasury, of course, and find the money for it. So Treasury, in the final analysis, will make good, but there is a time lag between the here and now and the making good by National Treasury. And generally the commission happen in here, and that will generally be after the budget cycle has closed. But in the SDPP package commission, we had had a project which we had been given money by National Treasury, I think to the tune of about 40 million, to fund what was then, I think, the National Dialogue Project. So what happened is that we had a shift of those resources towards the commission. Now for this year though, the situation is slightly different because we have had to dig within our own budget for that. So the implication indeed means that during the waiting period, we will have to slow down our programs to fund this thing, to get it off the ground. But, of course, National Treasury will come to the party. No, that I can't answer.
I think the process really sounds cumbersome because as a country we are forever going to have commissions, and I think we really need to have a process that is workable. And probably something that needs to be reviewed so that we can come up with a strategy that you can actually bring to us to look at in order for us to be ready for commissions whenever there is need. Like it's the case with, I guess, disaster management funds or something like that. And on the issue of the public protector and the increase in the funding of the public protector, did you say that because of their independence, you were not part of the process and you were not aware of what the engagement with Treasury. But over everything you see sittings, I think naturally there's got to be somebody from the Department of Justice, which would therefore mean that probably also the person from Justice was not clearly sensitized or did not give a full report, because you shouldn't actually find yourself in a situation where you're actually saying, I know nothing about it. The fact of the matter is that this is your vote as the Department of Justice, and you need to be informed about it, and you need to actually in principle support it in the independence of the nine institutions.
Understand the issue of contingency funds. Am I understanding it correctly that if we were to use, or if that money was to be used, it had to be an special appropriation bill? Okay, so you're the short gap, as it were. Okay, now then I understand it better, Jay, that it's they're the loaning agency, because otherwise to use that money from contingency funds, it would have to be a special appropriation bill. So it would either have to be done at in the first appropriation or the adjustments appropriation or a special appropriation. I think with disaster management, I remember we did do a special appropriation. We do occasionally special appropriations. A disaster was one of them. But I then understand it better and it becomes more understandable. But as far as the Treasury issue, I mean, I think the difficulty is that my understanding is Treasury is not meant to be a sort of super department, but to some extent that's what they become. Now I agree that you're just the channel for the Chapter 9s that are under justice, but you know, I don't feel that the public protector has been as cost effective as she could have been in terms of cutting costs, but yet Treasury like her. You know, whereas they don't seem to have any time for the Human Rights Commission at all. And I think that's a problem, Chair, and that's not anything the department can do. They work within a system. But I think it's something that we've got to assert.
Chair, that is squarely in our hands, and is a good tool to use it too. Yeah, if we happen to agree with the Honourable Jacob, which we might not. But I think how far down the track is our decision in Parliament that the budget money for all of the Chapter 9s should come to Parliament's budget vote? We took a resolution at the very end of the life of the previous Parliament, A, to set up the OISD, B, to look at the desirability, which is our recommendation in the JAP 9 report. No, I'm being careful about what I say. A, to set up the OISD, which has happened. B, to look at the desirability of voting their funds on Parliament's budget vote. But now that matter has been taken further, and I just cannot for the life of me think in which forum the decision was taken. But at the end of the day, the line ministry shouldn't carry the burden, because all you do is pay over the money. But you get some line ministries who like to curtail the independence, and that is why it's not a good idea. When you have some of the big regulators with economic impact, you have some DGs who it's not desirable that they should be in a position to turn off the taps or to govern the drawdown. Because the idea is that Parliament must put these on its own budget vote, and I hope that is where we will end up before too many more years pass by. But in the meantime, it's up to us to adjust.
We will make that adjustment, and Treasury will happily go along with it.
No, Treasury does go along with it, sir.
Okay.
Treasury fully supported the recommendation of the Chapter 9 review,
No.
And I will favour you with a photo set of the relevant papers. Trevor Manuel took the position, I think himself, that it is inimical to the independence of these institutions. It makes an assumption about their relationship with government when the line ministries stay over them. So Treasury, yes, is fully behind this.
I just want to know whether the DG has engaged in discussions regarding the adjustment appropriation. I can understand that it must be either a special appropriation or an adjustment, but that must happen quickly. I mean, you can't just take $75 million from your budget and wait indefinitely for there to be another budget cycle. So can you please tell, have you had discussions with them? Is it coming in the adjustment budget? And if not, I think you should.
You see, that's the difficulty I'm having with this process. We are asking these questions of the DG Justice. It's not her doing. It's not her doing, and she's being made to account for decisions. No. Let me finish, Ms. Schaefer. We all listened carefully to you. Now listen carefully to what I'm saying. Is DG Justice in a position to answer those questions? She's not. She didn't take the decision to appoint these commissions, and therefore to find the money. She was simply told, find the money. It's in excess of 100 million rand. That's the point. The question must be diverted to the presidency. That's the person who must answer the question, not DG Sindhani.
And look for a permanent solution for the future commission.
The political head should be...
Thank you very much. I prefer not. Thank you. We will provide a detailed response. We have it in the drop-down slide on progress on Ulukwane and Netbridge. But we'll also provide a detail on other courts where we are in all of that tomorrow in tomorrow's session. And then I really want to deal with this issue of job evaluation that came from the NPA. And deal with it in this way. What happened in the NPA we find quite difficult, because of course it has ignited a fire, and I think a fire is raging for us in the public sector now as a result of that labor court decision. That is the one aspect. And in taking time then in talking about it, the real issue that I want to raise is that in whatever other job evaluations could have happened in the department many, many years ago, we now have to quickly go and find out what they are and try and cost them. And I think it's really unfortunate, because the organization has moved on since then, and it's repositioned very differently from whenever. So similarly, NPA has moved on in leaps and bounds from the time that evaluation those job evaluations were done, and we've paid OSD, we've done job additional salaries, and now to the impact on government, and that's the point I want to raise this honourable house, is that already, even with OSD, and I'm saying this under extreme caution, but most accounting officers will tell you this, the performance of departments have not improved in any considerable manner after OSD. And I'm saying this under extreme caution, Chair. Because it's the same people doing the less amount of work and being paid a lot more. And that is one issue. Now, you compound the problem with this decision, and we're just going to pay more and receive a lot less. And that's the nutshell of the outcome of what is going to happen. Now, let's come to my question, which I am being asked. Have performance assessments of senior managers not been done since Advocate Melanie left? No, that is not entirely correct. Performance assessments of senior managers were indeed delayed, but were done. We continue to do that. We've been paying in badges, and I think I did say to the Honorable House the other year, I can't remember which year it was, that we had, that year we had not finalized the performance assessment. But indeed, last year, at the end of the financial year, we did pay a considerable amount of outstanding performance assessments. And just to put the record straight as well, these performance assessments include the backlog during my time, and I want to take responsibility for that. But they go back as far back as 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, and so on. Now, naturally, with the tight resources that we have had to really cut our cloth according to size. And in doing that, we couldn't just be irresponsible and pay every person what they are legally entitled to, just like in other areas. You'll remember very earlier this when we were talking about accruals. So equally, we as the department have also had to take some kind of waiting in the queue. Because if we didn't have to do, if we didn't do that, if we paid all the outstandings from 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007 until today, really we would have taken a great chunk of the budget and paid ourselves. And by now, you would really be happy about us if we had done that. So that's why the waiting in the queue is really a prudent managerial decision that we have had to do. I am evaluating people. My colleagues are evaluating people. These things do come to my office. I do deal with them, but we deal with them progressively. And we are going to continue to deal with them progressively, especially with the tightness in our budget that you have yourselves observed. Now, the emails that you will continue to receive and have been receiving in the past are going to continue. There are complaints about the department, particularly about myself, with the Public Protect, with the Human Rights Commission, with the Public Service Commission, with the Gender Equality, the Labour Court, with the CCMA, pretty much everywhere. There are petitions that are making their rounds in the department. I have one that I'm dealing with right now, from court clerks and all those wonderful people, and I accept that that's part of managing those processes. In fact, if we were to take human labor relations issues and bring them to Parliament, believe me, Parliament will not have a minute to work, because you could almost say there's a plan to keep us busy with labor relations issues instead of addressing the business. So we manage these issues within the, within certainly the context, but in even implementing the outstanding that we did in 2010 and 11, in implementing all those outstandings, we are also very sensitive to the fact that we have employees who we have not paid for a significant number of years, for reasons some of which are not clear, right? But it's still due to them anyway. From 2004, I mean, I don't even have those records anymore. But we had to formulate a mechanism that is transparent, that enables us to close those, because for as long as they are open, they create a contingent situation in our environment, and we do not want to deal with that. Am I going to deal with this email that I've just received? Certainly, I will deal with it.
but is the outcome going to be a payment of senior managers immediately? That I don't know, because I will have to go back and assess and run the numbers again and again and again. May I say this to this Honourable House? The looking at the budget is one of the jobs that I'm not qualified professionally to deal with, but that I have learned in the Department of Justice so quickly that I am forced to look at the movement in the numbers pretty much every other day. Worst still, from February, literally I talk to Johan twice a day to know, now that we take the budget, how much are we left with? Are we not going to have any unauthorized expenditure or not? So we literally do that every day, twice a day, right? We have the chair of the FinCom who looks at the risks of movement of budget and expenditure and all of those issues. And we do this, and sometimes you might, when you look at all our things that are not going well and say management is in town, it's not running the business right now, I would be sympathetic to a view like that. But I can tell you, we are in business, we are running this business the best we can. We have these challenges of colleagues who really believe. In fact, the most interesting thing in one of the petitions I've read, they say Treasury has cut the department's budget by 600 million, they say, in the petition. You, Gigi, tell Treasury to bring back the money, the 600 million, to make good for us. That's my job. So they say. Now, the reality of the matter is that, indeed, in deserved environments, we definitely are going to pay. There are processes that beat that. What are those? The evaluation committees? Moderating committees, they sit, we pay, they sit, we pay. But that's all we can do. Beyond paying, beyond availability, we just cannot pay.
Could you ask?
Because Sir Gigi did raise the statement that ESG hasn't resulted in improved performance, but I have therefore to ask, because we also know, because I have a petition on those as well, that the OSDs, which were supposed to give people with legal training better salaries, better prospects, had the exact opposite effect. Because of, all right. So, has that been corrected?
Honourable Chair, no. It has not been corrected, and the good thing is that when I did you can only earn less, you can't earn more, and that's the good thing. But the truth of the matter is that in us having to correct that, it's not something that we can correct in the Department of Justice. The whole OSD model must be reconsidered. We've made our own contributions to the Public Service and Administration Department to assist us in looking at issues of OSD. I can confirm this to honourable members that we are in court on OSD matters, not just in one case. In many cases, if my recollection is correct, in 5 cases we are in court just on OSD matters. On the same matters that we are in court for, specifically the exact same matters, we are in all these bodies that I have articulated. So actually, we can't do any work.
Yes, it's a follow-up on the OSD and the performance. And to say that my worry is when you talk about back payments that goes back to 2002-2003, when was OSD approved? And my feeling is that when it comes to issues of performance, it's like the whole performance management system itself within the department really needs attention. I don't know whether you have your HR department here, because I'm sure themselves, they are the ones that are supposed to give us a full report in terms of what is happening in this regard. Because you talk about OSD not making any difference in terms of performance. But for me, I do believe that OSD was actually supposed to be compensating in terms of ability and qualifications. And job evaluation would be a different process altogether that has got to do with probably restructuring of your organization that will then be followed by performance management. And performance management, then you actually say there's assessments that are actually still lagging behind from the previous I find the whole system to be cumbersome. The performance management system should be such that it should be year to year, financial year to year. So I do believe that we need to get a full report on this, an HR report on this, to just help us understand to where you stand in terms of human resource management within the Department of Justice in terms of job evaluation, performance management.
This is a separate issue. It's an issue which we're trying to assist reading your financial statements and trying to ascertain what money is owed to the department. If you look at your financial statements, you've got under your annual report page 129 receivables, which refers to an annexure 4, which indicates a number of departments that owe you money, and one presumes that state attorney will act on behalf of other departments and you pay their legal costs and they then have to pay you back. So maybe you can just give us an indication as to how the progress is going of collecting that money. And then second, where you collect money on behalf of departments, such as fines, and you pay it into the fiscus. Really, if that happens, you've got a financial statement, you've got a note that three, departmental revenue, fines, penalties, and forfeits, is that all kept in the department, or is funds are paid across to National Treasury, to the Central Revenue Fund? Now, if that's the case, the department is doing work and paying it into National Treasury. We're pleading for them to give us back money. So surely one could look at that as well. This department is paying across so much to the National Revenue Fund. Why is it so unfair to ask for additional funding to enable us to do that very work? So there are two aspects there that, if I understand it correctly, from your note 3 and note 13, your receivables. But then to count against you, I noticed that in your annexure 5, you've got tables, which might balance it out, because it seems there that you owe other departments intergovernmental payables. So it's checks and balances. At the end of the day, I've got to be careful, because a lot of departments seem to owe you money, but you seem to owe them as well.
Mr. Slotch and honorable members in DG, can I ask that we stop there? Your question on
Fine. And you could come back in writing if you'd like detail on that.
Can we reconvene at 2? Thank you.